Good evening, everybody. You're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back with you here tonight on Monday for hopefully a very eventful week of the show. It's been a long time. It's been a long time since we did the show. What was it? Last Friday? Not last Friday, but the Friday before. It's been a year. Wow. Remember the last episode of America First last year in 2019? I heard that joke a lot. Well, it's our first show of 2020, our first show back from vacation, and a lot has happened. You know, I think everybody predicted that, including myself, before I left for a week. It is always the case. There is not a single exception that whenever I take off from the show for a little while, take a little time for myself to collect, you know, figure some things out, sort out my mental situation. It is always the case that I come back and the world is on fire. You know, I think last time I was on vacation, there was a terror attack on an ICE headquarters. The time before that, it was the U.S.-North Korea summit for the first time. And of course, I go away for vacation this week and we almost get into a war with Iran. Very epic. Love to see it. So obviously a lot has happened since the last time we spoke, since the last time you and I got together here to do this show. But tonight we're finally going to sort through it all. I said on Telegram shortly before going live that this show is probably going to be the best overview of the Iran situation overall that has been made since the big development, which is Soleimani getting assassinated on the 3rd. So it's going to be a great show. We're going to take the whole show and talk about Iran. I have a whiteboard here going over some of the major dates. And I think it's very important that we get into where all of this came from. You know, obviously we're talking about the current tensions between the United States and Iran. A lot has happened in the last week. It started with some attacks on American bases in Iraq. There were a number of rocket and missile attacks against U.S. bases all throughout the month of December. And then there was a particularly bad attack in the base in Kirkuk in Iraq. And that initiated a series of retaliations. The United States responded by attacking Hezbollah. Hezbollah came to the American embassy in the Green Zone in Baghdad and caused a lot of trouble there. In response to that, the United States assassinated Soleimani, who is the head of the Quds Force, which is this elite division in the IRGC, the answer to the Ayatollah. And that is the big news, is the killing of Soleimani. And now the question is, what will happen next? How will Iran respond? How will they retaliate? And then what is the United States' reaction to that going to be? So a lot has happened in the past week, but like I said, it's very important to figure out how this week happened. What precipitated a lot of these tensions? What has caused the tensions between the United States, or rather this administration in particular, the Trump administration and the Iranian regime? We're going to go all the way back to 2018, give you what I hope is a quick but informative overview of events in the past couple of years, and then we'll dive into what happened this week, and then I will predict and analyze the situation as it stands now and what will happen in the future. So it's going to be a great show, going to be informative, like I said. Whiteboard. We're going to have a whiteboard. I know you guys like that. Very visual. I'm a visual person too. It's going to be a lot of information, so that'll help to lay it out, I think. And that's all we're going to be talking about tonight. You know, usually we do a couple of things, but in light of recent events, we're going to really tackle the whole thing. And it'll be the best exposition and analysis of the Iran situation anywhere. Because I have to tell you, I'm on vacation for a week. I went out to the Southwest. Not going to say specifically where, because I can't really give out too much information these days now that I'm a high-profile internet celebrity. But I took my vacation down Southwest, celebrated New Year's Eve and everything else. And whenever I go away on vacation, it's like maddening, especially when something happens, because I see all the content on the internet, you know, like on Twitter, on social media, on YouTube. And I'm thinking, like, I'm the best. I'm the best. My take needs to be out there. Nobody else is doing a good enough job. It's time for me to come back. It's time for me to give my take. So that's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to outclass the field. I'm going to show you why America First is the best show once again. And I have to tell you, it's so frustrating. I'm like on vacation. We're just hanging out for the most part. I was hanging out with like Baked Alaska, Millennial Matt, a few other people, Zoomer Clips. And we're hanging out just like watching TV. And I'm just watching the situation unfold in Iran. Embassy protests, missile strikes, assassination. Thinking like, I need to be behind the desk. I need to give my take. So it's good to be back to talk about that. But the vacation was good. It was, it's sort of interesting. You know, I go away for a week to get a bit of respite, to relax a little bit because it's been so intense the past few months. You understand, from the Groyper Wars and the aftermath and SAS and Groyper Leadership Summit, everything that took place at the tail end of 2019, I had to take a little bit of a break to, like I said, collect myself, relax, get prepared mentally for the election year. It's going to be even crazier in 2020. And all throughout the week, all I could think about is all the drama, all the politics, all the current events happening. You know, but it was a good week. I saw the movie Uncut Gems, which was very good. I saw Richard Jewell, which was pretty good. Very implicit politically. I'll have to find some time to talk about the movie Richard Jewell, maybe on a D live stream this week, so I feel like we should go into that. We watched the entirety of The Mandalorian. We watched the High School Musical series. We watched The World According to Jeff Goldblum. I talked about a lot of this stuff last night. I did a D live stream at like 2 a.m. yesterday. So it was a lot of content consumption. We also went to a big party in a certain city, almost slipped there, in a certain city for New Year's Eve. Very fun, ringing in the new year with all the friends. I had In-N-Out Burger at least three times. You guys know this is my favorite burger chain. That was great. And I also tried Whataburger, not a fan. So it was a pretty relaxing, pretty chill vacation. But it's good to be back. Good to be back behind the desk doing the show. I will say, before I dive into all the Iran stuff, there's one thing I want to address, which is Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes. I saw this the past couple of nights. When was the Golden Globes? Like Sunday night or something? And just before we dive into Iran, I just want to address this very quickly because on my D live stream last night and then on Twitter, I see a lot of people asking me my take on Ricky Gervais. And I don't know if you saw this. I don't watch the award shows. I don't watch the Golden Globes. But I think the Golden Globes were last night, right? Sunday? That sounds right to me. It was Sunday night. And I guess Ricky Gervais, you know, famous skeptic, atheist, Anglo comedian, got up and was making all these really edgy jokes, edgy statements about Jeffrey Epstein and Apple and all this. And everyone's like, this is based. Yo, Ricky Gervais based? Red-pilled? And I just have to sigh and, you know, roll my eyes. I'm thinking, if it's on television, it's not based, okay? It's really that simple. You know, people are acting like this guy is up there breaking the conditioning. They say, well, if Ricky Gervais made the Jeffrey Epstein joke, that means Ricky Gervais is based. It's the opposite. If Ricky Gervais went on an awards show and made the Jeffrey Epstein joke, it doesn't mean the Golden Globes are based. It means the joke is cringe. It doesn't mean that Ricky Gervais is red-pilled. It means talking about China is blue-pilled. Do you see how that works? Everybody's in my mentions, Ricky Gervais, bitch, what do you think about that? Didn't he name them? Didn't he go off last night? No. You mean he went off on his scripted appearance at the award show? I don't think so. So I saw that. Just wanted to point that out. I saw a lot of this on the timeline. A lot of people retweeting it. A lot of the usual suspects in Conservative Inc. Oh, that was so based last night. No, not based. Cringe. And I called it, by the way. I called that about the Jeffrey Epstein joke in particular. I said, you know, they have, I think I addressed this not too long ago. It was actually fairly recently, a long time after Jeffrey Epstein actually was murdered. I said, you know, they've taken this Jeffrey Epstein thing, they've totally twisted it until now it's like this Reddit punchline, but it's not a joke. We should actually be mad about it, but you can't be mad about it anymore because now they turned it into something that's, you know, just a meme, a catchphrase, like, jet fuel doesn't melt steel beams. It's like, why do you think people don't even look into 9/11 anymore? It's because they turned it into a joke. Bush did 9/11. Well, somebody did. Somebody in the Pentagon knew about it. You know, I don't want to get into all that, but the same is true with the Jeffrey Epstein thing. Oh, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. He didn't. Who killed him then? Israel? I don't know. But, you know, somebody killed them, and now it's just a big joke, and actors are making fun of it. Actors are not based. Actors are pedophiles, and they're in the pocket of, you know, the cabal that runs the world. So, anyway, saw that, had to name them real quick, had to get that out of my system. Also, one other thing, growing the beard back. I don't know if you can tell. I don't know if you've noticed. It's kind of like, I don't know if it's not really grown out to where it should be yet. I didn't have enough time to really grow it out, but I kind of like the look. What I'm thinking, my plan, you know, when I say trust the plan is to grow out the mustache, and then once the mustache is grown out, I will disengage the beard, shave the beard down to a stubble level, or maybe completely, but the goal is the mustache, you know, disengage the beard. I've said this before, to me, it's like the lunar mission, you know, the mustache is like the lunar capsule, it's like the landing vehicle, and the beard is sort of like the boosters, like the rocket that gets it into the atmosphere, and then you disengage the beard and you have the mustache. That's the way I think about it. But in any case, all right, enough, it's time to get serious, it's time to get down to business. No more jokes, no more laughing, we have to talk about Iran. So, a lot of people are scared, a lot of people are confused, they're wondering what has happened. You know, I was with a few different people over the week, you know, over when New Year's Eve was happening and everything, when all this was unfolding. Some people knowing more than others. Okay, I was with Baked Alaska, and I'm like trying to tweet about this thing, and Baked is like, wait, so who is this guy? Wait, so what's the coups for? So what's this? And I'm like, can you stop? I'm trying to tweet right now, you know? So Bates is asking me all these questions. I understand maybe some people are not really up to speed on where we are with Iran. That's not a dig at him, by the way. Love that guy. But the point being, I understand a lot of people are maybe confused about why we're in this situation. What exactly is going on? Who is Qasem Soleimani? Why did America kill him? You know, what was the pretext for all of this? And that's what I'm going to try to do tonight, is to get into some of the answers here. And really, the big picture, to sort of start with this exposition, I'm going to go over the whole timeline. And that's what my whiteboard is, which I'll get out in a moment, laying out how we arrived here. What are the major events, the major critical junctures or inflection points in this series of escalating tensions? And the big picture to me is denuclearization. That, to me, is the big picture. You know, right now, obviously, the events that have transpired this week are pretty simple. You had a major attack on an American military base in Kirkuk by these Iranian-backed militias in Iraq. Iranian-backed militias in Iraq attacked an American base in Iraq. The United States responded with a big airstrike. We killed, I think it was five strikes in particular, three in Iraq, two in Syria. All the details are in my notes, which I'll get to in a moment. But America retaliates for the strike on our base with an overwhelming response. And this was in response to a lot of attacks on American bases going on throughout the month of December that were perpetrated by Iranian-backed militias. So we respond to all of that essentially with a big airstrike. In response to this, on New Year's Eve, on December 31st, there's a big presence, there's a big protest and rally and a lot of chaos outside of the American embassy in Baghdad. This was sponsored by Hezbollah. This was sponsored by Iranian-backed forces in Iraq. In response to this and other things, America then kills the head of the Quds forces, Qasem Soleimani, in an airstrike, I think in an airport in Iraq. The Quds Forces is this elite special forces division of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. That is a paramilitary group in Iran, which answers to the Ayatollah Khamenei. The way it works in Iran is they have really sort of two militaries in a sense. They've got their military, and then they've got the IRGC. The IRGC acts as the defender of the Iranian Revolution. So, of course, the current regime in Iran is the Islamic Revolutionary Regime established in 1979 after the Islamic Revolution. They have a military which operates as a conventional military. Then they have the IRGC, which is seen as sort of the vanguard of the revolution. And so they do all kinds of activities, not just in Iran, but also in other countries, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Syria. They answer to the Ayatollah, the supreme leader, whereas the military answers to the president, President Rouhani. So that's just a little bit of who Soleimani is. It's a big deal. Many people say that he was really the second most powerful person in Iran, which we'll get into why that is the case in a little bit in Iran. So that happened, and now there is this big question about how will Iran react to this, how will they retaliate for the killing of their general, and then where will we be once they respond? If it's a big response, will we have to go to war? If it's a small response, will we keep escalating? You know, that's really where we are. So to understand this, we have to go back to, like I said, denuclearization. This is the big picture. This is where a lot of the tension originates. So we're going to go back to the Iran nuclear deal, which is the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. I'll give you a little bit of background about that, and then we'll get into the timeline here. So this is according to Wikipedia, a basic overview. It says, in July 2015, an agreement was concluded with Iran, China, France, Germany, Russia, the United Kingdom, the United States, and the European Union. It provided that Iran's nuclear activities would be limited in exchange for reduced sanctions. According to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, that's the Iran nuclear deal, every 90 days, the President of the United States would certify, among other things, that Iran was adhering to the terms of the agreement. Leading up to the U.S. withdrawal, the IAEA asserted that its inspectors had verified that Iran had implemented its nuclear-related commitments since the agreement. The basic gist of the deal was that sanctions would be lifted in exchange for Iran agreeing to several serious restrictions on its nuclear development. Among the most important, the deal included reducing Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium by 97% and banning them from possessing any uranium potent enough that it could be used to fuel a bomb, capping its number of nuclear centrifuges, which are devices that are used to enrich uranium, at roughly 5,000, and only permitting it to use old, outdated, and slow centrifuges, stopping Iran from operating its Arak facility. That's not Iraq, by the way, the country. It's Arak, A-R-A-K, which is in Iran, used to make plutonium that could fuel a bomb. And lastly, permitting wide-ranging and intrusive IAEA inspections designed to verify that Iran isn't cheating on any portion of the deal. So, I mean, we could really go way back with Iran and the United States. We could go back to 1953. We could go back to 1979. To set the stage for our conflict with Iran, it's really over nuclear weapons, that Iran wants to develop a nuclear arsenal to protect themselves. You know, it's the same reason that North Korea wants a nuclear arsenal or other rogue regimes want a nuclear arsenal. A nuclear arsenal is a check against the United States. You know, other countries look around at a unilateral world where America has global hegemony. You know, it's not the Cold War. They cannot appeal to some great power for protection. Russia cannot protect you. China cannot protect you. So in a world where America can basically do whatever they want, a rogue regime that has opposed the United States in the past or has been attacked by the United States in the past, what is the only way they can protect themselves from the United States? Well, they can develop nuclear weapons. The United States will not attack a nuclear power because the casualties would be too high, right? They don't want a nuclear war, so that guarantees their safety. They sort of accede to the level of other great powers simply by having a nuclear arsenal. Even if they're a poor country, don't have a strong conventional military, if you have a nuclear weapon, you're on the level of China, Russia, France, United Kingdom. We understand this. This is pretty simple stuff. In 2015, Barack Obama puts together the Iran deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And whereas for the past 25 years or so, we've been putting sanctions on Iran for not signing on to the Non-Proliferation Treaty or not abiding by it, you know, we suspect that they're developing a nuclear weapon clandestinely in secrecy. We have put together this joint deal where we are removing all the sanctions that have been built up over the last two or three decades in response to their nuclear program. And in exchange for that, they promise that they'll adhere to some of these commitments that will ensure and give us the peace of mind in the West that they're not developing nuclear weapons. That's the JCPOA. What has set the stage for, I'm talking modern, the Trump administration's conflict with Iran, is that Trump pulled us out of the nuclear deal in 2018. So this is more from Wikipedia. It says the Trump administration certified in April 2017 and in July 2017 that Iran was complying with the deal. Excuse me. But on October 13th, 2017, Trump announced that the U.S. would not make the certification provided for under U.S. domestic law on the basis that the suspension of sanctions was not proportionate and appropriate, but stopped short of terminating the deal. So in October 2017, he said, we have to renegotiate or else we're terminating, but did not terminate. He recertified the deal. In other words, he reaffirmed that sanctions would remain off so long as Iran is following their commitments under the deal. He made the same threat in January 2018, saying, again, unless we renegotiate, we will terminate the deal. This brings us to May 8th, 2018, and this is the first stop on our whiteboard timeline here, which I will pull out now and give me a moment here. This begins where we are today, how we arrived at killing Qassem Soleimani, our first stop on the timeline. So on May 8th, 2018, Trump officially pulls us out of the nuclear deal, the JCPOA. President Trump formally announces that the U.S. will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal and reimpose sanctions. He said in his statement withdrawing us from the deal, quote, we cannot prevent an Iranian bomb under the decaying and rotten structure of the current agreement. Therefore, I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. Now, here's why this is important. In the statement, this was almost 2 years ago. It was 1.5 years ago. It's January 2020. This is May 2018 that we formally pull out of the nuclear deal. Trump lays out the case for why we pulled out, and this set of conditions essentially sets up the framework for our current antagonisms with Iran. Why did he pull us out of the nuclear deal? Trump gave us four reasons. He says, and this is all from his statement on May 8th, he said, quote, about the nuclear deal, even if Iran fully complies, the regime can still be on the verge of a nuclear breakout in just a short period of time. That means breakout means the ability to develop a nuclear arsenal. So even if they adhere to all the commitments of the deal, well, in a short amount of time, they could still build a nuclear weapon. So in other words, even if they renege on all their commitments tomorrow, in just a short amount of time, they can build a nuclear arsenal. That's what that means. You know, so in other words, even if they're adhering to it for a long time, even for the entire lifetime of the agreement, which is 10 years, you know, in 2025, it's a very short amount of time between them. Either, you know, they finish out the deal, they've committed to it, they've adhered to it for 10 years, and then the deal expires, and then it's a short time for them to develop a nuclear arsenal, or they renege on it before that, and then they could develop a nuclear arsenal very quickly. This is from Trump's statement. I'm not making a value judgment about this yet. I'm telling you this is what Trump has said. He is laying out his conditions for why we pulled out of the deal. He said, even if Iran fully complies, they can still be on the verge of a breakout in a short period of time. The deal's sunset provisions are totally unacceptable. If I allowed this deal to stand, there would soon be a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. So the breakout capacity, because the conditions are insufficient, is reason number one why we pulled out. He says, number two, quote, inspection provisions lack adequate mechanisms to prevent, detect, and punish cheating, and don't even have the unqualified right to inspect many important locations, including military facilities. That's condition number two. That, you know, number one, the conditions of the deal are insufficient to prevent Iran from getting a breakout capability. Number two, even if they were sufficient, there's no enforcement. There's no inspection mechanism. We can't even look into military facilities. Therefore, we don't even know if they're fully complying with the deal, because we can't see all the facilities, right? And even if we could inspect all the facilities, well, we can't enforce the deal if we find that they are cheating. There's really no good way to put back on sanctions gradually or moderately. You know, the deal is really all or nothing. It says no sanctions and you adhere to these commitments. So that's problem number two. Problem number three, he says that the deal fails to address the regime's development of ballistic missiles that could deliver nuclear warheads. That's also a little bit of, that's part of the problem. I'll get into that a little bit more later. So number three is ballistic missiles. And number four, he says the deal does nothing to constrain Iran's destabilizing activities, including its support for terrorism. He says since the agreement, Iran's bloody ambitions have grown only more brazen. So you could really categorize this in three main ways. You know, number one, the Iran nuclear deal did not maintain sufficient enforcement mechanisms or conditions that would reasonably prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon or a breakout capability. And if it did, well, we wouldn't even be able to know if they had a breakout capability and couldn't stop them if we knew that they were working towards that. So number one is that it does not constrain Iran's nuclear program in any realistic way. Number two, the deal did nothing about Iran's ballistic missile program. That's problematic because if Iran's developing ICBM technology, You know, they could develop a warhead very easily, strap it on, and then they're a full-fledged nuclear power. You know, North Korea has nuclear weapons, but they don't have ICBMs yet. So at the same time that Iran maintains this breakout capability, essentially, or they're at short order to create a breakout capability, they're developing their ballistic missile technology. So maybe by the end of the deal, Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons, but they do have ICBM technology. You could see that it'd be a very short time between that point and them developing a full-on ICBM technology. And that would be a problem. North Korea did nuclear weapons first, and then now they're developing missile technology. You could say that Iran is maybe doing it the other way around, if anything. So number one is a nuclear program. Number two is ballistic missiles. And then number three concerns what they're doing in the region, which is to say, you know, about America, whenever we talk about Iran, we talk about it in terms of terrorism, which has poisoned the well for conversation. This is a very important point. Whenever we talk about militias or militant groups in the Middle East, we say they're terrorists. We use that language to describe Al-Qaeda and ISIS, but also Hamas, and also Hezbollah, and also Al-Nusra, and also sometimes the Kurds. And that's really not a great way of talking about the Middle East because, you know, in the United States, we have this idea that there are certain military tactics that are okay and then some that are not. And it's really somewhat arbitrary. And it ignores the fact that Middle Eastern politics is complicated. The Taliban uses terrorist tactics, but they're also a political party. You know, and you could say that Hezbollah might use asymmetrical tactics or tactics that might target civilians, but also they're legitimate political actors in Lebanon and in Iraq. So to say that, well, Iran sponsors terrorists across the Middle East. You know, this is why when we talk on Fox News or we hear on Fox News about Iran, they say they're the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the Middle East. Well, on some level, they might be sponsoring groups that use terrorist tactics, but it's not really an honest way to have the conversation. You know, it would be more apropos to say that Iran sponsors militant groups across the Middle East, like Hezbollah, like Hamas, like some other groups, and those militant groups sometimes oppose our interests, or more accurately, the interests of our allies, like Israel, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, you know, countries like this. So really, it's more apt to say that Iran is using the money that they got from sanctions relief and outright payments they got from the U.S. government to fund militias in Syria, for example, where they're expanding Iranian influence over Damascus, or they're spending that money on Iranian-backed militias in Iraq, where they're expanding Iranian influence. Now, would you say that there is something totally wrong with a country expanding its influence, or is it a nation's right and prerogative, and it makes sense that a nation would expand its interests? Now, that's not to say that, you know, terrorism is okay or anything like that, but it is to say that there's a difference between sponsoring groups that sometimes use terrorist tactics or subgroups that use terrorist tactics and saying, you know, well, they're supporting terrorism. Well, it's not really the same as like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. You know, that's a very important distinction to make if you want to have a serious conversation. So broadly, the three grievances that the Trump administration has with Iran are laid out in this framework. We pulled out of the nuclear deal, and that allows us to slap back on all kinds of sanctions and basically exist in a state of de facto war with Iran. I mean, that's really what it is. Huge crushing sanctions, secondary sanctions, attacking their proxies in Iraq and Syria. Pulling out of the nuclear deal did that. And why? Well, because number one, the deal didn't constrain their nuclear program. It didn't do anything about their missile program. And lastly, it did not restrain them in Syria, in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Yemen, for example, where they're suspected to be supporting proxies, Shiite proxies in those countries. So that's really important. That's where we start is May 8th, 2018. We pull out of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal, and we lay out those three reasons. The next major thing, April 22nd, 2019, this is a little bit later. Well, actually, we should go in the middle here. So sometime between May 8th, 2018 and April 22nd, 2019, we put all the sanctions back on Iran. The Iran nuclear deal says we lift sanctions in exchange for these commitments. On May 8th, we said we're pulling out of the deal. The deal still exists. You know, Iran is still a signatory on the deal along with all the P5 countries and Germany and I think Japan and the EU. But the United States is just no longer a part of it. The United States says we're no longer a part of it, and that means now they're out of the deal, we can slap back on sanctions. So on November 5th, 2018, we put sanctions back on Iran. This is from a couple of different news sources. It says, the U.S. restores sanctions targeting Iran's oil, banking, and transportation sectors and threaten more action to stop its outlaw policies, steps the Islamic Republic called economic warfare and vowed to defy. The United States officially reimposed all penalties that had been lifted as part of the Iranian nuclear deal as the Trump administration added nearly 700 targets, including 50 Iranian financial institutions. So November 5th, 2018, we slapped back all the sanctions that were on before the Iran nuclear deal. So we sort of reset as though those negotiations, the deal never happened, as well as more targets. But the really significant change happened, the really significant inflection point happened in April of 2019. So in May, we basically knew the sanctions were coming back. I mean, we knew that was going to happen. We knew that we would reimpose economic penalties on Iran for their nuclear program. But April 22nd is really when we dealt a lot of damage and things started to escalate. And there's sort of a big gap, almost a year, between withdrawing from the deal and when things really start to get hot. This is when the United States ends waivers for oil sanctions. So after we pulled out of the deal and after we put on all these sanctions in November 2018, we also said that we would give waivers out to the 8 biggest importers of Iranian oil. You know, part of the sanctions said that anybody that is importing Iranian oil will be subject to sanctions too. You know, so for example, if China is buying oil from Iran, and Iran is an oil country, right? I mean, they get most of their money from oil. Most of the economy is built on oil sales. That means that not only are we putting sanctions on Iran, but also if China buys Iranian oil, then we're putting sanctions on China. We're putting sanctions on the companies that buy the oil. That's what a secondary sanction is. Primary sanction, you know, is going after the country itself. A secondary sanction is indirect. We say that, well, if anybody's even buying Iranian oil, well, then they'll get sanctioned too. We'll shut that part of it down as well. But in November 2018, shortly after we withdrew from the deal, we said that we will give waivers to 8 of the biggest countries that are buying Iranian oil. And that basically saves the Iranian economy. You know, we could put sanctions on the government officials. We could put sanctions on their transportation industry, metals, things like that. And that's going to do a lot of damage. But obviously, oil is the big thing. That's what their economy is built on. So if we say that the 8 biggest importers of Iranian oil are going to get a pass on the sanctions, it doesn't really have teeth as much as it would otherwise. So on April 22nd, there's a news report here from MSNBC. It says, at the time of the withdrawal from the JCPOA, the Trump administration granted 6-month waivers to 8 countries that allowed them to continue importing limited quantities of crude oil from Iran. The market widely expected Washington to extend the waivers for 5 of the countries. However, the administration says that any country still importing oil from Iran will be subject to U.S. sanctions beginning on May 2nd. That was on April 22nd that this was announced. So this is why you have such a big gap here. We withdrew from the plan in 2018, but it wasn't until April and May 2019 that we said we're actually going to put secondary sanctions on oil, which is going to cripple Iran's oil market and then really start to hurt their economy. And that's exactly what happened. Iran's economy began to totally explode because of this. Their currency is worth nothing. Unemployment's out of control. Their GDP is contracting. This has hurt all their activities in other countries. I know Trump talks a lot about this. This is when we really start to inflict a lot of damage. Subsequently, this is why tensions have been getting worse. This is why we had to go all the way back to 2018 to show you that really what this is about is the economic warfare against Iran because of the nuclear program. And now that Iran's economy is suffering, now that they're exploding because they're not able to sell as much oil or heavy metals or other things, but mainly oil, now they are lashing out wildly and trying to provoke the United States. That's what's happening. So this leads us to June 13th, 2019, when we see the Gulf of Oman incident, the oil tankers that were attacked. It feels like it was not long ago, but this was 6 months ago, that 2 tankers were attacked in the Gulf of Oman out of the Strait of Hormuz, part of the Persian Gulf. You might have to look at a map maybe to understand all of this, but, you know, basically, to give you a very brief summary of the geography, because it is important. What matters in the Middle East is oil. Most of the oil comes from the Persian Gulf, which is a small channel of water between Saudi Arabia and Iran on either side. All the oil that comes from the Persian Gulf, or a lot of it, is transported by sea ship, by naval ships, outside of the Strait of Hormuz. That's the opening between the Persian Gulf, and the Indian Ocean. So this little strait, the Strait of Hormuz, is obviously a very strategic and critical point. The Strait of Hormuz was closed during the energy crisis in the 1970s. Iran has threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz in the past few years. I think they did close it a couple of decades ago. You shut down the Strait of Hormuz, you shut down the shipping of oil around the world. Something like 30% or 25% of the world's seaborne oil comes out of the Strait of Hormuz. So it's a big deal. So two ships were attacked going out of Strait of Hormuz in the Gulf of Oman, allegedly by Iran. This is according to various sources. It says on June 13th, 2019, two oil tankers were attacked near the Strait of Hormuz while they transited the Gulf of Oman. The Kokuka Courageous, flagged in Panama and operated by a company based in Japan, and Front Altair, flagged in Marshall Islands and operated by a company based in Norway, were attacked, allegedly with limpet mines or flying objects sustaining fire damage. And something similar had happened in May 2019 as well. A less successful attack, but four tankers had been attacked in the Gulf of Oman a month prior on May 12th. The article goes on, it says, amid heightened tensions between Iran and the United States blamed Iran for the attacks. Saudi Arabia and the United Kingdom supported the United States accusation. Germany stated that there is strong evidence that Iran was responsible for the attacks, while Japan has asked for more proof of Iran's culpability. Iran denied the accusation, blaming the United States for spreading disinformation and warmongering. In response to the incident, the United States announced on June 17th the deployment of 1,000 additional troops to the Middle East. And that's a little bit of foreshadowing. So we withdraw from the deal. We end the oil sanctions waivers. June 13th, these oil tankers are attacked. This had already happened in May. We send in troops in response. Tensions are escalated. A week later, June 20th, an American drone is shot down over Iran. I don't know if you remember this last year, but this was sort of a tricky thing. Iran said that the U.S. drone violated their airspace. We said that it didn't. It doesn't really matter. Nobody knows for sure. I mean, the people that know are the people that are monitoring the stuff on, you know, in the military on their screens. I don't think probably many people in the government really know what happened. Do Congress people know? Do bureaucrats know? We certainly can never know for sure where the drone really was. But Iran did shoot down an American surveillance drone. This caused big problems. This is from Wikipedia. It says, on June 20th, 2019, Iran's IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, shot down a U.S. RQ-4A Global Hawk surveillance drone with a surface-to-air missile over the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian officials said that the drone violated their airspace, while U.S. officials responded that the drone was in international airspace. Both Iran and the U.S. differ on where the incident actually occurred. U.S. President Donald Trump ordered a military strike against IRGC radar and missile sites before reversing the decision. Instead, Trump approved a cyber attack intended to disable IRGC computer systems. And on the 24th, Trump announced hard-hitting targeted sanctions against the Revolutionary Guard Corps, as well as the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. So this is sort of the buildup. This is kind of where it cuts off. I guess you have maybe a couple of distinct periods. You've got May and November, this is us pulling out of the deal, reapplying sanctions. You've got this little saga. We end the oil sanctions waivers, and then we get a series of provocations. Tankers attacked in the Strait of Hormuz. The drone is shot down. We retaliate. And I don't know if you remember, but last year it got very close to war. I don't know if you remember, but after Iran shot down the drone, that incident in particular, Trump said, "We're locked and loaded," and called off at the last minute. That's what they said. I don't know if that was theatrics or not, but they said that Trump called off at the last minute and ships were like ready to go, airstrikes all over Iran, that they were going to target missile sites, they were going to target radar inside Iran. And this would have been an unprecedented escalation with Iran, but it didn't happen. Trump called it off and said, instead, we'll do a cyber attack, which was a nothing, and more sanctions. So that was last summer, and that's sort of where we left it. Since then, there hasn't really been anything extremely notable since June and July. In July, we said that we shot down one of their drones. They refuted it. But outside of that, there really has not been anything extremely notable, any major events, any other crises like this of this magnitude until December. And this brings us to where we are today. But all this background is obviously very important. So where we get to today, how we can bring you up to speed, is then on December 27th, you have an American base in Kirkuk, which is in Iraq, attacked by Iranian-backed militias. And I'll read to you, this is a source, this is a news source talking about the attack. It says, quote, officials with the U.S.-led mission to defeat ISIS said Friday that a U.S. civilian contractor was killed and several American troops were wounded in a rocket attack targeting an Iraqi base in Kirkuk. The attack, which occurred Friday around 7:20 p.m. local time in Iraq, also wounded several Iraqi personnel, officials with Operation Inherent Resolve told Military Times in an emailed statement. The Iraqi military posted to social media on Friday that several missiles struck the K-1 camp in Kirkuk, which houses coalition forces. U.S. officials believe Iranian-backed militias are behind a recent spate of rocket attacks that have targeted U.S. bases and interests in Iraq over the last couple of months. A U.S. official told Military Times that Iran-backed militias are now using more lethal and longer-range 122-millimeter rockets in their attacks. Friday's attack on Kirkuk is at least the 11th rocket attack targeting an outpost housing American forces in the last 2 months. So the attack on Kirkuk on December 27th was at least the 11th rocket attack targeting outposts that are hosting American forces in the last 2 months. So, I mean, Iran is, or these Iranian-backed militias have been provoking us for a long time in Iraq. It says U.S. officials have warned Iran and its proxies to halt rocket attacks in the country. In mid-December, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper phoned Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi and asked for help to stop the rocket attacks. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo warned Iran and its leaders in December of a decisive U.S. response if the regime or its militias harm American troops or allies in the region. So this is really what started the events of the last week or so, is the attack on this, it's American personnel on an Iraqi base within Iraq, attacked by Iranian militias, and this is the 11th, at least the 11th such attack of its kind in the last 2 months, where American personnel are inside, rocket attacks. In response to this attack in particular, on December 29th, the U.S. strikes Hezbollah. And I'll read you the report about this. It says U.S. forces struck five Hezbollah targets on Sunday, according to a Pentagon news release, in retaliation for a Friday attack on an Iraqi coalition base, the one in Kirkuk, that killed one U.S. civilian. The locations, three in Iraq and two in Syria, included storage facilities and command and control centers the Iran-backed group uses to carry out attacks, according to Pentagon spokesman Jonathan Hoffman. He says, quote, Iran and their Hezbollah proxy forces must cease their attacks on U.S. and coalition forces and respect Iraq's sovereignty to prevent additional defensive actions by U.S. forces. The Pentagon said Sunday its strike specifically targeted an Iranian-backed militia known as Qataib Hezbollah. I'm probably butchering this name, but this is the initial engagement that caused the further escalation. As you've got all these attacks by these militias on American forces essentially in Iraq, we respond by striking five targets. And then on December 31st, this is when it really starts to get nasty. In response to our response, in response to our retaliatory strike on Hezbollah, there's a huge demonstration at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. And this is on New Year's Eve, on December 31st. This is from the New York Times. It says, protesters broke into the heavily guarded compound of the United States Embassy in Baghdad on Tuesday and set fires inside in anger over American airstrikes that killed 24 members of an Iranian-backed militia over the weekend. The men did not enter the main embassy buildings and later withdrew from the compound, joining thousands of protesters and militia fighters outside, chanting, "Death to America," throwing rocks covering the walls with graffiti and demanding that the United States withdraw its forces from Iraq. The protest began Tuesday morning when the thousands of militia members gathered outside the Green Zone after prayer services for the fighters killed in the American strikes. While few of them were armed, many were members of Qataib Hezbollah and other fighting groups that are technically overseen by the Iraqi military. This Hezbollah group is separate from the Hezbollah movement in Lebanon, although both groups are backed by Iran and oppose the United States. So they come to an American embassy. Now, mind you, in a very technical way, an American embassy is U.S. soil. You know, we have, and that is diplomatic protocol, that is international law that a lot of people seem to be very concerned about. According to international law, according to protocol, A foreign embassy is that country. You know, that is why if a service person has a child on an American embassy or an American military base, child's considered an American citizen. Because on a technical level, our embassy in Iraq is American soil. That's why you have sort of safe quarters, safe refuge on an American embassy in any country. You know, if you go to any American diplomatic office or military base, it is seen as good as the country, even within that country. You know that they have to respect the laws of the United States inside the embassy. Very specific rules, right? And this is pretty standard stuff. So that Hezbollah attacked our embassy is kind of a big deal. You know, it's bad enough that you've got these militias that did kill an American civilian on an Iraqi base and are attacking, in at least 11 such cases over the past 2 months, they're attacking facilities housing Americans. You know, for them to come to our embassy and to set fires and try to break inside, to have 1,000 people demonstrating outside. And by the way, they were permitted into the green zone by the Iraqi government. This is a cordoned off area that protesters could not get inside if the Iraqi government did not permit them. So in both cases, this is sort of an egregious escalation. You know, that Hezbollah is now inside an American embassy. That is really a flagrant violation of international standards. And then on top of that the Iraqi government was complicit in this is also a problem. And that is where we arrive finally on January 3rd at the killing of Soleimani. And I'll read you this report, my last report here from the BBC about what happened. It says Iran's most powerful military commander, General Qasem Soleimani, has been killed by a U.S. airstrike, in Iraq. The 62-year-old getting the hiccups here a little bit. The 62-year-old spearheaded Iranian military operations in the Middle East as head of Iran's elite Quds force. He was killed at Baghdad Airport along with other Iran-backed militia figures early on Friday in a strike ordered by U.S. President Donald Trump. Mr. Trump said the general was, quote, directly and indirectly responsible for the deaths of millions of people. Under his leadership, Iran had bolstered Hezbollah in Lebanon, and other pro-Iranian militant groups, expanded its military presence in Iraq and Syria, and orchestrated Syria's offensive against rebel groups in the country's long civil war. Soleimani was widely seen as the second most powerful figure in Iran behind the Ayatollah. The Quds force, an elite unit of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, reported directly to the Ayatollah, and Soleimani was hailed as a heroic and national figure. Iran's Revolutionary Guards said Iraqi militia leader Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis was among those killed as well. Muhandis commanded the Iranian-backed Qataib Hezbollah group, which Washington blamed for a rocket attack which killed a U.S. civilian contractor in northern Iraq last Friday. He also effectively led the popular mobilization units, an umbrella of militias in Iraq dominated by groups aligned with Iran. Most of those killed in the strike belong to the PM, which is the Popular Mobilization, according to the organization. Soleimani's son-in-law and a member of the Lebanese Hezbollah were also among the dead. So this is the Iranian situation. This is a pretty good distillation of where we are and how we got there, what's going on. And what I want to convey to you by going over all the history is really sort of the big picture, the fundamental question, which is a conflict over nuclear proliferation. I also want to show you that there is a tit for tat, right? The American military strike in Syria and Iraq didn't come from nowhere. We've been antagonized for months by Iranian militias. Now, again, I'm not making a value judgment, but I'm simply illustrating that, you know, there are areas of this where you could say that Iran is culpable. You know, Iran, I don't know if they took out the oil tankers, but, you know, let's say they did. The United States used a lot of restraint to not attack them for that. I mean, that went relatively unanswered. The two incidents in the Gulf of Oman, four tankers were targeted on May 12, 2019, and then two more were targeted on June 13th, and that went virtually unanswered. June 20th, Iran shoots down an American surveillance drone. Now, they say that it was over Iranian airspace. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But they shot down the drone. The IRGC shot down the drone. That's a big deal. You know, that's a surface-to-air missile originating from Iran attacking an American ship. That is direct Iranian-American hostility. The United States, again, showed a tremendous amount of restraint. Trump said, we're locked and loaded. We're going to blow up radar and missile sites. And the last minute he called it off and did a cyber attack and more sanctions and then allegedly shot down an Iranian drone. Again, a lot of this, we don't even really know what's true and what's not. You know, in July, for example, the president said, we shot down an Iranian unmanned drone as retaliation. The Iranian said the drone wasn't shot down. We really have no idea. The same is true with the tankers. Do we know that that was Iran? Not really. The United States said we did, but, you know, the United States also said there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Japan, who actually had one of the tankers that was attacked in this Gulf of Oman incident back in June, they said they don't even believe it. They said we need more evidence, right? So we don't really even know what's going on, but we do have the news reports. We do have what the national and international news media is reporting, and the international news said that Iran is shooting down drones and that Iran is taking out tankers. And this summer, we did virtually nothing. You know, everything that we did in response was basically symbolic or a gesture, or might not have even happened in the first place, right? In the case of the Iranian drone that was allegedly shot down. So there's been a tremendous amount of restraint on our part as we have conducted a policy of containment against Iran. And what does containment mean? It means that one of the bigger existential threats to the United States is the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, the spread of nuclear weapons in particular into the hands of rogue states, which is sort of a loaded expression. It's states that are opposed to the American-led world order, states like Venezuela, Iran, North Korea. One of our biggest threats is that those countries that oppose our world order, that oppose our country for whatever reason, justified or not justified, rational or irrational, that they will acquire weapons of mass destruction. Because if these weapons get into the wrong hands, well, they could be used carelessly or recklessly or used against us, or it limits our ability to influence events in other regions of the world. You know, if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, then that's a checkmate. That means that they are a regional player, they can have this sphere of influence, and there's not really a whole lot the United States can do about it. The same is true with North Korea on the Korean Peninsula. So that is one of our major strategic objectives, is to stop the spread of nuclear weapons. The policy of containment says that, well, it's not really worth it to go to war with Iran over nuclear weapons. It really wouldn't make much sense from any perspective, logistical, pragmatic, otherwise, monetary, that we would engage in yet another ground war in the Middle East to pursue regime change, to try to install another leader, to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. So we've said instead, we'll put on a maximum pressure campaign to contain Iran, to contain, in particular, the Iranian regime, this Islamic Revolutionary Republic regime. And so by putting on sanctions and secondary sanctions, and this sort of diplomatic sanction, in some sense, we are trying to pressure either regime change to happen from within Iran, that we can make the economy so bad within the country, to make conditions so bad inside of Iran, that either their regime says it's not worth it, and we give up our nuclear ambitions, and we'll submit to whatever concessions you want us to give, and, you know, we will not pursue a nuclear weapon. Or conditions will get so bad that either within the regime or from outside the regime, a new regime will come forward. You know, maybe there'll be a change of pace within the Iranian revolutionary regime, or maybe there'll be a revolution in Iran. But either way, this is a way to change events inside the country without going in and doing it ourselves with boots on the ground. Now, again, I'm not saying, you know, before people get on my case, I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm saying this is the policy, you know. Everything that I have described on the show so far has been descriptive, not prescriptive. I'm describing how this administration sees the country and what this administration seeks to do with Iran, what their strategy is, what their game plan is. Haven't made any value judgment yet, but this is how we got here, is we have pursued, this administration has pursued this economic war against Iran in an attempt to contain them so that they cannot acquire a nuclear weapon. In response to this maximum pressure campaign, Iran has been lashing out wildly against the United States. What is the purpose of this? To get the United States to back down. In the same way that the Trump administration is trying to convince Iran that it's not worth it to pursue nuclear weapons, you know, it's really a form of persuasion. It's a form of negotiating. We're saying, you know, look, you can either not have an economy, or you can give up nuclear weapons. You know, either we'll make it intolerable for you to live in your country, or you can give up nuclear weapons. Now Iran is sort of turning the tables on us, and they're saying, okay, well, you can conduct this maximum pressure campaign against us. But so long as you do that, we're going to lash out. And we're going to make it dangerous for you to ship your oil out of the Strait of Hormuz. And we're going to make it dangerous for your contractors and your military personnel in Iraq. And we're going to try and fight you everywhere you are in the Middle East. And we're going to do all these different things so that if you're going to conduct this maximum pressure campaign against us, we're going to make it hard for you. We're going to make it costly as well. We're going to make you bleed for this, essentially, in the hopes that the United States will make a similar cost-benefit analysis and say, well, we can either have this maximum pressure campaign against Iran and we'll be attacked and so on, or we could back off, let them do their thing, and Iran will let us ship our oil and so on. But these are really the calculations that are being made in Tehran and Washington, D.C. These are sort of the strategies that are being pursued on either side. That's why, for example, we pull out of the deal, we put on the sanctions, withdraw the waivers, and we retaliate when they lash out to say, oh no, you can't retaliate, you know, you can't do this, we'll retaliate more, you really don't want to do this. But it's really sort of a negotiation in a sense, and that's really where it comes from. It's not so much about, I mean, Soleimani is the end game after years of this kind of stuff going on. Now the reaction. We have to get to the reaction. I'll take away the whiteboard here for a moment, and I'll read to you some reports about what the reaction to the killing of Soleimani has been, because, of course, the recent events have constituted an escalation, specifically the killing of Qassem Soleimani. We can put on maximum sanctions, and we can shoot down an Iranian unmanned drone, but Qassem Soleimani was widely regarded as the number two most powerful person in Iran. You know, we're talking about the leader of the IRGC. This would be akin, it's not a perfect analogy, because the United States is a nuclear power and the world hegemon and so on, but it would be akin, if you're looking at the two governments, to if Iran killed the Secretary of Defense, right? Or the Secretary of State, or somebody like that. If they killed one of the Supreme Commanders in one of the DOD command centers, it would be as if they killed a high-ranking official in the U.S. government. Some people I saw on Twitter were comparing this to the killing of Osama bin Laden. It's very different. Osama bin Laden is a leader of al-Qaeda, which is a non-state actor. They are a terrorist organization that has attacked the United States on our soil. It's very different. You know, 9/11, very different. Qassem Soleimani is inside of the Iranian government and a very powerful person inside the Iranian government. So to kill him would be on par with if Iran killed one of our government officials. And I've heard a lot of people, like boomers and these kinds of people online saying that Qassem Soleimani was this terrorist and he backed terrorists and he was a terrible person. He very well may be a terrible person. He very well may could have killed a lot of people. But there are a lot of terrible people in the world. You know, the Kim Jong-un is a terrible guy. He's killed millions of people, something like that, whatever. Xi Jinping is in some sense a terrible guy. You know, his government has done terrible things in China. You could say that a lot of people, you could say that George W. Bush is a terrible person. George W. Bush has killed people because of wars, right? He's ordered drone strikes. Bill Clinton's, there's a lot of terrible people. Some of the worst people ever are in government. You know, if you watch world events and world history, the people with the most blood on their hands are the heads of military or government or whatever. But that does not inform your foreign policy. It would not make sense for us to drone strike Xi Jinping. It would not make sense for us to drone strike Kim Jong-un. You know, to kill a foreign head of state does not solve your problems. It complicates them, right? Now, I'm getting into analysis here, but talking about the killing of Qassem Soleimani, it's a very big deal. It's a very big escalation. Whereas we went from pulling out of the deal, maximum economic pressure, to now killing a very high-ranking official in the Iranian government, this is really a disproportionate response. Now, you could say that Iran killed a contractor, an Iranian-backed proxy killed an American contractor, an Iraqi base, and we retaliated, right? We retaliated. An Iranian-backed militia shows up to our embassy, and then we kill a high-ranking official in Iran. This is serious stuff. That's a really big deal. And the response has been commensurate to that. People have been freaking out about World War III, possible conflict with Iran. And I'll read you very briefly some of the responses. I'll read you a full report about Iran's response. Iranian state television reported that the country will no longer abide by any of the limits of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action or the Iran nuclear deal. The announcement came yesterday after another Iranian official said it would consider taking even harsher steps over the U.S. killing of Soleimani. State TV cited a statement by Iranian president's administration saying the country will not observe limitations on its enrichment, the amount of stockpiled enriched uranium, as well as research and development on its nuclear activities. Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, condemned the attacks on Twitter. He said, quote, "The U.S.'s act of international terrorism targeting and assassinating General Soleimani, the most effective force fighting ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, is extremely dangerous and a foolish escalation. The U.S. bears full responsibility for all consequences of its rogue adventurism." Iran's defense minister, Amir Hatami, was quoted by state news saying that the Islamic Republic would take a crushing revenge for Soleimani's assassination, quote, "from all those involved and responsible." The military advisor to Iran's supreme leader said Sunday that Tehran's response to the killing by the United States of its most influential general will, quote, "for sure be military." In other words, will for sure be a military response. In an exclusive interview with CNN in Tehran, the advisor, Major General Hossein Dagan, made the most specific and direct threat yet by a senior Iranian official following the killing of General Qasem Soleimani in a drone strike in Baghdad. He said Iran would retaliate directly against U.S. military sites. Iran has said that they have targets all over the Middle East and possibly Europe as well. Some have said targets in the United States. So Iran is going to retaliate in a serious way. That's really the trouble here. I'll read you now how the United States has responded. Trump has tweeted out, quote, "Iran is talking very boldly about targeting certain U.S. assets as revenge for ridding the world of their terrorist leader who had just killed an American and badly wounded many others, not to mention all the people he had killed over his lifetime, including recently hundreds of Iranian protesters. He is already attacking our embassy and preparing for additional hits in other locations. Iran has been nothing but problems for many years. Let this serve as a warning that if Iran strikes any Americans or American assets, we have hundreds of Iranian, rather, we have targeted 52 Iranian sites representing the 52 American hostages taken by Iran many years ago, some at a very high level and important to Iran and the Iranian culture, and those targets and Iran itself will be hit very, this is in all capital letters, will be hit very fast and very hard. The USA wants no more threats," which is epic. I have to say, you know, I'll clarify that in a moment, but the tweet itself is simply epic. He goes on, "These media posts will serve as notification to the United States Congress that should Iran strike any U.S. person or target, the U.S. will quickly and fully strike back and perhaps in a disproportionate manner. Such legal notice is not required, but is given nonetheless. And the U.S. reaction so far has been to send in 3,000 additional troops into the Middle East." And so now I will give you my thoughts on the situation. So as I said, so far, most of what I've tried to do for this show is to lay out the whole enchilada, the whole situation, the background, the history, current events, some of the reactions, how we got here. It has all been descriptive. You know, I've posted about this a little bit on Twitter, a little bit on Telegram, and I think people have deliberately, maybe, misconstrued my views or misrepresented them. Some people get it, but I'll give you sort of a breakdown of where I stand on all of this. I know it's a lot of information. It requires a lot of exposition to really give you the full picture here. I will say that in the first place, about Qasem Soleimani, it remains to be seen whether or not this was a good idea. To me, projecting into the future, what is going to happen next, the question is, what will Iran's retaliation look like? The problem with a disproportionate strike like this is it demands a response. That's the problem. You know, if the policy is containment, well, what is required is that you have the discipline to maintain maximum economic pressure and more or less ignore a lot of the provocations. Now, a little bit more on that in a moment, but it really ought to be economic in nature, or diplomatic or political, but mostly economic. The whole idea behind the containment strategy is that we're going to try to persuade Iran to abandon their nuclear ambitions without spending lots of money, without sending in a ground force, without going to war with Iran. We cannot afford a war with Iran. I'll just say it unequivocally in case anybody's confused. War with Iran is unacceptable under any circumstance. We can't afford it. It would destroy our country. We've done this how many more times? The outcome would not be good. Probably if we went to war with Iran, we would outright lose. And if we did win, we'd be occupying that country for 10 years. And I'm sure that if we ever got out, when we ever got out, what came next would be worse than what we have today. So war with Iran is a mistake. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to see that. It really doesn't matter if you're a neocon, neoliberal, isolationist, whatever, non-interventionist. It doesn't matter. War with Iran is just simply unacceptable. Any kind of ground engagement would just not go well for us. It would require something like 250,000 ground troops to liberate Iran, right? To defeat Iran. Moreover, the terrain would be a disaster. It would require us to occupy the country. It would cost at least $2 trillion. This is something that is simply not in the cards. I think that short of Iran directly threatening to nuke America, you know, if they had an ICBM in the sky headed towards America, short of that, I think almost nothing would be worth a war with Iran. You know, so I'll just say that at the outset. And having said that, the policy of containment is informed by that priority, the idea that our priorities are at home, not overseas. You know, we shouldn't be in Iran, but frankly, we also shouldn't be in Iraq, and we also shouldn't be in Syria, and we also shouldn't be in Yemen. And I'll tell you what, it's hard for Iranians to kill Americans if Americans are not in Iraq. So all the provocations by Iran would be virtually impossible if Trump had fulfilled his initial campaign promise to get us out of the Middle East, right? If we were not in Iraq, Iran could not attack Americans in Iraq. If we were not in Syria, Iran could not attack Americans in Syria. If we were not in Yemen, Iran could not attack Americans in Yemen. But we are. And we're involved much further than our troops being there. And we shouldn't be. The whole point of containment is to say that, well, we have certain interests in the Middle East. For example, nuclear non-proliferation. And we can achieve them without war. We can achieve them without unilateral, expensive, costly, unnecessary conflict, without sending 250,000 ground troops to occupy a country forever. So containment says we can convince them to not build a nuclear weapon by just crushing their economy, you know, simply crushing their economy. You can use our clout with trade and with other things to make sure that if they do pursue a nuclear weapon, it'll be very costly for them, or make it so costly that they can't do it, or so costly that they'll change their minds. But that's the point of containment. When you kill Qasem Soleimani, when you escalate it to that level, it defeats the whole purpose of containment. Because now that we've killed their top general, they have to respond. If Iran killed Mike Pence, right? If Iran killed Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, America would not let that go. America, if somebody did that to us, we'd probably nuke them. And we should expect something like that from Iran. You know, so far they've gone through a period of mourning. They've entered an official 3-day mourning period, and they have said that their intention is to take this up with international law, but also to do military strikes. We don't know what we can expect. You know, will Iran attack military positions in the Middle East? Will Iran attack targets in Europe? Will they attack civilians? Will they do terrorist attacks on American soil? Nobody really knows. But we all know that Iran has to save face. If we do something like this, you know, really all other considerations go outside the window. We have forced their hand on this. They must retaliate. And their retaliation must send a message to America, but also to the rest of the world and the American people. And it must say that if you attack Iran, there's going to be terrible, bloody, costly consequences. That's what their retaliation is going to be. So we don't know what form that will take, the scale, the scope, the targets. We will have to wait and see. But here's the problem. And this is what I said last year. This is what I said back over the summer when it was the drones and the tankers and the Strait of Hormuz. Once you start escalating, you lose control of the situation. Once you initiate a cycle of escalation, you are no longer in control of the trajectory and the ultimate outcome. Because we have now forced Iran's hand. Iran does not have a choice anymore. That's what I mean by you lose control. They must retaliate. What is that going to look like? If they kill Americans on American soil, then we will be forced to retaliate. Do you see how that works? We will not have an option. If Iran comes back to America and, you know, kills hundreds of Americans, we can't say, oh, well, now we're going to de-escalate. Now, well, never mind. it's fair. We hit you, now you hit us. Doesn't work like that. Now we are going to have to go back and hit them twice as hard. We're going to probably have to attack Iran itself. Do you think Iran can then simply take that and de-escalate? They cannot. They will have to retaliate. And that is how you get a tit for tat and end up in a full-scale war that nobody wants, except for Israel, Saudi Arabia, the neocons, Zionists, right? The military-industrial complex. I shouldn't say nobody, but none of the American people want. I don't think the president wants that. But that's how you get there, is by this sort of careless and reckless escalation. That's what Vladimir Putin said about all this. He said it's just careless and reckless by the United States. And that's exactly what those words that I would use to describe this, is careless, reckless. Who thought this through? Now, on the one hand, there's an argument to be made that Iran is attacking our people. They're attacking our military installations in Iraq, or their proxies are attacking our military installations in Iraq. That's how this all started, right? And in a certain sense, the events of this week, as I pointed out on the timeline, started on December 27th when there was this particularly bad attack in Kirkuk that killed one American civilian contractor. Now, I understand that there has to be retaliation for that, right? And we retaliated. We attacked these Hezbollah people. Hezbollah people come and they attack the American embassy. Okay. But then the response is to kill the leader of the IRGC. Understand this, that is Iran's backyard, not our backyard, right? So there is this argument to be made that America has to respond to these provocations in some capacity, right? That if Iran attacks a tanker, allegedly, or if Iran blows up our drone, then we respond. But it only works. Containment only makes sense, and retaliating within that framework only makes sense if the retaliation is proportionate. You know, they attacked our unmanned drone last June. And we attacked one of their unmanned drones in July. And that was the end of it, right? At least at that point in time. We didn't hear a lot about this until recently. You know, that was last summer. But it doesn't work when Iranian proxies attack us, which, by the way, you know, kind of makes sense, right? I mean, they're fighting for influence in Iraq. We're in Iraq. I mean, this is just how it goes. These are failed states. These are countries that have been turned upside down and destabilized. It's not to justify that people are attacking America, but it is to say, you know, we've been in these countries for 20 years. A missile flies on top of a base and we're going to pretend like, well, what is going on? Why is everyone attacking us? Maybe we shouldn't be there, right? So I will say, in the first place, we shouldn't be there. If we weren't there, we wouldn't get attacked. But if we are there, we have to recognize that there will be some amount of conflict. There will be some amount of friction and things will happen. And if things do happen, then you respond proportionately, right? If somebody gets attacked, if a contractor gets killed in Kirkuk, then fine. Do 5 airstrikes, attack 5 targets in Iraq and Syria that are linked to Hezbollah. And they respond, they come to our embassy. Okay, well, secure the embassy first and foremost. And then, I don't know, kill the leader of the, Lebanese Hezbollah, or rather the Iraqi Hezbollah. Kill the leader of the popular movement. What is the group called? The PM. You know, kill that guy, the popular mobilization unit. Kill that leader, you know? But to then attack the Iranian general, that is a severe and disproportionate escalation. That's really the big problem with it. And so to me, the question of whether or not this was, people are asking me, do you support the killing of Soleimani? Do you not support the killing of Soleimani? To me, it's a question of what the response will look like. It's really, as I've said, the strategy of containment only works if we can control Iran lashing out at us. And so far as we can maintain this maximum pressure campaign, I think that eventually we will get a good outcome. You know, sanctioning Iran, I support that. Crushing Iran's economy, I support that, insofar as they're pursuing a nuclear arsenal. You know, if that is happening, and Iran is really hurting from this, you've seen that there's been popular unrest for the past couple of years because of the economic sanctions. The sanctions are working. You have to allow the sanctions to work. But if Iran draws us into a conflict or you know, forces us to back away from the brink, it defeats the whole purpose. So to me, we have to wait and see if this goes without some kind of severe escalation and we don't end up with a war in Iran. I'll say that ultimately, it was probably very careless and very reckless. But, you know, if it doesn't get us involved in war with Iran, I don't know, I'm kind of neutral on it. But if this is the thing that escalates into war with Iran, then obviously, very bad, obviously a big mistake. So it sort of remains to be seen. At this point in time, I would say that I don't really support it. At this point in time, I would say I think it was a mistake. I think we overshot a little bit, and I think that it has the potential now to escalate wildly. Now, the airstrikes prior to that, I support. You know, I supported the missile strikes in Syria. I supported, you know, the attacks in response to them attacking the base in Kirkuk. You know, I support all of that. I support proportional responses that do not draw us further into conflict. But that's exactly what has been going on for the last 2 years, is that we have been slowly drawn further into this conflict, right? It's been going on for the past 2 years, really. Every time we see a flare-up like this, we send 1,000 more troops to the Middle East. 14,000 troops have been, additional troops have been sent to the Middle East since last May. 14,000 more troops. And you got to think about this, not just in the context of American interest and sort of the geopolitical situation, but how about any of Trump's promises? You know, frankly, I think it's kind of gay when people do this thing where every time there's a flare-up in the Middle East, they tag Trump and they say, remember when you said this in 2014? Like, I think it's kind of a cope. It's like that meme of Wojak with he's crying and he's got a mask that's smiling. Where's this guy? Where's this Trump? You know, they pull up an old tweet where he says, Obama wants a war with Iran to win re-election. It's like, you just look pathetic when you do that. But they're not wrong. But the sentiment is not wrong. The president promised that we would end wars. And we're getting into more of them. You know, he said we would end the war in Iraq, and the war in Afghanistan, and the war in Syria, Yemen, Somalia, Libya's blowing up. You know, we'll have to talk about that tomorrow. Something's going on there. Nobody's been talking about it. We've got troops in West Africa. And instead of, not only are we not ending the wars, but we have more troops in these countries than when we started. More troops in these countries than last year, and more than on Inauguration Day. So the question becomes, what really are we doing? What really is the strategy? You know, to me, my ideal foreign policy is pull us out of Afghanistan, pull us out of Iraq, pull us out of Syria. You could leave bases. You know, I'm fine with military bases, and maybe we've got a small residual force or something like that. We've got 50,000 troops across the Middle East, if you're including Qatar and Kuwait and Iraq and everything. 50,000, something like that. 3,000 more on the way as of this week. Draw down these troop totals, you know, maybe you keep a few hundred in Iraq, a few hundred in Kuwait, or I'm not a military expert. Leave behind enough that, you know, if something happens, we'd be able to respond in some capacity. I'm not against the idea of having military bases and having troops everywhere, but we should not be in a state of war with Afghanistan. We've lost, it's over. It's actually probably worse than when we got there. Time to pack it up and leave. Same with Iraq, same with Syria, Yemen. We have no business in Syria. We have no business in Yemen. So draw down all those troops and keep up the maximum pressure campaign with the sanctions. That's what we should be doing. Instead, what's happening is that we've basically kept on hold our engagement in all these countries, and we're just simply escalating. And now we're just escalating with every other country, Iran more than anybody else. So to me, this is probably a huge crisis. I think that this could really go sour. Now, honestly, my gut is telling me that, like, nothing ever happens. We've been watching things for the past so many years, and it feels like, you know, nothing ever really happens. But this is probably the most serious escalation that we've seen in the 21st century against Iran. You know, one of the benefits of the Iraq war is that in the immediate aftermath of that, a lot of surrounding countries shut down their nuclear programs because they were afraid of America. Now, it's questionable whether or not it was worth it, right? But, you know, we started out the decade with these horrible wars. We're still in them and so on. But this is probably the most serious provocation since these wars started, and could be the most serious escalation with Iran in particular. So we'll see where it goes. I'm praying that Iran doesn't retaliate in a huge way. What Trump is trying to do now is to soften the blow. When Trump says, we're going to attack 52 sites and cultural sites and all this, this is trying to get Iran to mute their response, mitigate their response, so that we won't be drawn further into it. But what's done is done. Soleimani's dead. Iran has to respond. And they're going to have to respond in a big way. Now, if Iran pulls back and they concede, well, they'll just look like idiots. You know, I mean, that's going to be a huge loss for them and a big win for us. It's a huge gamble. But the question is, why would we take a gamble like this if the sanctions are working? You know, to me, that's sort of the bottom line. I will say there's sort of like other theories on this. You know, it is interesting that this is all happening while the North Korea nuclear process is stalling. One thought that I had was that on New Year's Eve, Kim Jong-un said, I will not denuclearize. You know, they're talking about totally going back on their promise to denuclearize, saying that we're going to start doing nuclear tests again, or we're going to test more weapons of mass destruction. So I wonder if, just like 2 years ago when Trump did the Syria strikes, is he playing the Middle East off of Asia, right? Is he going to strike Iran? Is he going to antagonize Iran, disproportionately strike them to send a message to North Korea? I mean, maybe that's possible. Maybe that's... I definitely don't think that's front and center, but that could be part of it. That's one theory. Another theory I've seen floating around is that maybe this is intended to get us out of Iraq. You know, Iraq is very mad at us. Their government there says they want us out of their country. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but, you know, that's definitely going to cause friction between us and their government. So there's a lot of different theories on where this could go. We will really just have to wait and see. The ball is in Iran's court right now, and everything that happens afterward is contingent on what their response is, how big it is, how many Americans die, what that's going to look like. If they attack some Europeans, we'll have to see what that'll be like. If they attack Americans, we'll be in serious jeopardy of a war starting. But to me, I always have to revert back to the fact that we don't want war with Iran. You know, we have to be guided by our priorities. The priority is almost all of our priorities are domestic. Almost all of our priorities are happening in the United States. All the biggest threats to our country are, you know, they're domestic. It's immigration, it's trade, it's what's happening with the economy. Iran, the Middle East, is really none of our concern. Strategically, it's far less important than it was maybe 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, if it was ever even that important. You know, you could say that maybe North Africa and the Middle East was important during the Cold War. It's not the Cold War anymore, right? You could say that at a time it was important for oil. We're developing our own oil, so it's a little bit less important. Other countries are developing their own oil. So I would say that strategically speaking, we really have no business having the kind of presence that we have there anymore. Certainly not engaging in another ground war. A ground war would be detrimental to this country. A war with Iran would be detrimental to the United States. We can't have that happen. Now, I understand that Trump might want to, you know, use missile strikes or things like that to try to negotiate with Iran's nuclear program, and then not every military action constitutes war or something that could lead to war. But this is different than everything we've seen for the past couple of years. You know, in the past, I've defended the Syrian missile strikes. I've defended aircraft carriers. I've defended drone strikes, or, you know, drones being shot down, things like that, sponsoring resistance movements. I've been down for just about everything shy of war, but this is something that could seriously escalate beyond our control. So I would say that this is different than everything we've seen before in this administration, and it seems like a mistake. It seems like we're really going down the wrong path here, because, you know, it could very easily go out of control, and then what do we do then? You know, if we're involved in a war with Iran, Trump's going to lose the election. We're not going to be able to, they're going to bankrupt our country, right? We'll be in the Middle East forever. I don't think we'll ever get out of there. I don't think we'll ever get out of there now, but, I mean, if we go to war with Iran, we're certainly never getting out. So that, to me, is what's happening with Iran. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens, and then we'll see what Iran does. You just got to be safe. You know, remember, if you happen to be in the Middle East, be safe. If you're in Europe, be safe. I think, you know, we will probably be okay on the American homeland, but even so, you know, be safe. Keep in mind, we're sort of at a fever pitch in terms of world relations, in terms of global affairs. But we'll have to wait and see. And then once Iran retaliates, we can maybe breathe a sigh of relief and say, well, at least now we know what direction this is headed in. But it's not good. It's very not good. People have called me like a neocon over this. I don't know how anything I've said is like neocon-like. I've seen some people online are very upset about the Trump tweeted out that he would attack cultural sites. And some people are really bent out of shape about that. And I said, like, you know, I don't oppose war with Iran because we're going to blow up like a, you know, ancient library or something. That's all I meant to say by that. Some people are very offended. I made some remarks on Telegram where I said that people are babies because they're whining about cultural sites and this kind of thing. And all I meant to say is that if your concern is like heritage sites or whatever, international law, national sovereignty, like I don't oppose war with Iran because the UN says we can't do it. I don't oppose war with Iran because we might blow up like a mosque or something. I oppose war with Iran because it would ruin America. But I oppose war with Iran. You understand what I'm saying? So we'll have to wait and see. We might get a war. You might see me drafted from the Groyper War to the Iranian War. We'll have to wait and see. But we're going to move on. We are going to take a look at our Super Chats. We'll see what you guys are saying about all of this. This show has gone on for like 10 million hours, it feels like. I've been on the air already for 90 minutes, and we haven't even gotten into Super Chats. So it's going to be a long one. I'm feeling sweaty already, and my nose is starting to itch. And I'm going to take a little sip. I'm going to take a moment here to take a little sip of water and take a little bit of a break here before we dive into the Super Chats. And we'll see what you guys are saying. Oh, yeah. one thing I left out is, you know, in case anybody was wondering, do you know the one party that really wants this to happen? You know the one party that really wants war with Iran? In case anybody didn't know, it is Israel, right? And I found it so amazing. I did forget to mention this. It's incredible. We told Israel that this strike was going to happen before we even told Congress. Isn't that amazing? Before we told the United Kingdom, before we told any European country, before we told our own Congress, we told Israel this strike was going down. And even better, today, Israel said, like, oh, we're not going to get involved. Isn't that amazing? We had to tell Israel it was going to happen. We did it in some capacity for them. And then ultimately, oh, no, no. They say they don't want to get involved. Well, that's amazing, right? We go into all these wars that benefit them and they don't even fight in them. Must be nice. Must be nice. Because at the end of the day, I'm talking about all this from my perspective. My perspective is that the nuclear program has to be shut down. I just think that's not in our national security interest to have nuclear proliferation. Don't think we need to do ground wars to achieve that, but it should. I think we should pursue that. But why we've gone after Iran and all these other countries is really not about that. It's really because, you know, in the case of Hezbollah in particular, Hezbollah does not pose a threat to the United States. Iran does not pose a threat to the United States as a non-nuclear power or even as a nuclear power. Do you know who Iran is the biggest threat to? Israel, not Europe. Not the United States. Now, it doesn't mean that Iran is our friend. It doesn't mean that Iran doesn't do things that are counter to our interests. But in terms of priority, Iran is Israel's biggest problem. And it's Saudi Arabia's biggest problem. And it's the Emirates' biggest problem. But primarily, I mean, who's the lobby, right? So I forgot to throw that in there. I'm thinking about sort of my perspective on this, which is I've always said that North Korea, Iran, we should use containment strategies. But of course, the real reason that we remain heavily involved in all these countries is because you look at Israel and the greatest threat to their national security is Palestine and to an extent, Lebanon. You know that Israel is trying to create this one state solution. They want all of the mandate of Palestine to be Jewish. They want all of the mandate of Palestine to be under the control of the Jewish regime in Jerusalem. So they hate the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, the Palestinians there, and they hate the militant groups that support them, Hamas, Hezbollah, and they have a big problem on their northern border where Lebanon is almost controlled by Hezbollah. Hezbollah, which is sponsored by Iran, Hezbollah, which is a group that formed out of response to the war in Lebanon that Israel fought. You know, that's why they support our presence in Syria. When Trump said we were going to pull out of Syria, the first person to cry foul was the ADL, or rather, not the ADL, AIPAC. AIPAC said, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee said, this is the biggest mistake, how dare you? And all the other Zionists said the same thing, it's a big mistake, because the American presence in Syria guarantees that Syria will remain destabilized, that Syria will not come under the control of one government. And if Syria is destabilized, that means that Israel can attack Syria with impunity. They can do missile strikes. They can do missile strikes in Lebanon. That means that at no point can Iran gain a foothold in Syria and begin to give material and military support to Hezbollah in Lebanon. So fundamentally, You know, and this has been the playbook for the past 20 years. Take out Iraq, take out Syria, and then take out Iran. It's laid out in the Clean Break Memo. It's laid out in Oded Yonan's 1980s plan for Israel. That's been the strategy. You know, Iraq is a Ba'athist stronghold. They had this weird theory. They had this really, like, convoluted theory in the 1990s about the nature of Ba'athism and Iraq and Syria. But they took out Iraq because Iraq was this powerful, antagonistic country. They took out Syria because if Syria is destabilized, then they can take out Lebanon, essentially. Then they can get a handle on this Hezbollah problem. And then ultimately, if they take out Iran, well, then there's no support to be given to Hezbollah in the first place. But that has been, that is what they want to achieve. Iraq, Syria, Iran, that's a trifecta. And nobody wants it more than the neocons. Nobody wants it more than the Zionists, than Israel. And they have been egging this on for years. They've been conducting strikes in Iraq. They've been constructing strikes in Syria. They've been beating the war drums with Iran since the 1990s. You could say maybe even before that. So I forgot to mention that angle. Of course, that 9 times out of 10, that sort of goes without saying, but it's important to reaffirm tonight. But let's see. We will now dive into our super chats. And we can see what you, now that we've taken care of that. The problem is it's such a big topic tonight. Obviously, there's so much ground to cover that it's, I forget, like, you know, little bits and pieces of it that are critical, that are of critical importance. You know, there's obviously, there's the history, there's what's happening within Iran, there's what's happening within the United States, what's happening in Trump's head, what's happening in the foreign policy circles. There's really a lot to it. There's a lot of moving parts. So forgive me if I leave something out. I've tried to do a good job of sort of summarizing how we got here and where Trump is at in particular. But let's see. We'll take a look at the Super Chats now. We've got No One who says $151 for a Cook County license plate sticker. Well, it looks like I'm, I don't know. I got so many Super Chats tonight, it looks like it's not even loading Super Chats before like 7:20 p.m. So give me a second. I'll have to go back in and get those. I'll have to load them. Yeah, I pull up the Super Chat. What is it? What would you say? I'm pulling up the box where all my Super Chats are displayed, and it's not even going back past like 7:37. I can't even scroll up any further because so many Super Chats tonight, I can't even, it won't even load them all. I guess it loads a certain amount and then it starts cutting them off. So it'll just take a second. Let me scroll down in this other tab and I'll be able to find them here. Let's see. Yeah, a lot of people are saying America First is canceled. Doesn't really feel like that tonight. Let's see. Over the past week. Stefan Molly Meme says, Nick, what's going on, big guy? You're spending your time with grifters when you said the character's paramount. Are you referring to Baked Alaska? I assume that's what that's about. A lot of people call Baked Alaska a grifter. I'll just say I'm a very good judge of character. So I'll just say that. Wagey says, to all the nibbas on Nick's grill, for Nick just hanging out with an eccentric straight friend. Yeah, here we go. You guys are reading too much into it and or are homophobes. Shame on you all. Well, there's nothing wrong with being homophobic, but the first part is definitely true. Will says, how do you reconcile promoting catboys with what St. Paul says? Effeminate men go to hell and God forbidding cross-dressing. I don't think I've ever promoted anybody. I think I hung out with a friend of mine, but I don't think I've ever promoted anything. Some fag says, we got too cocky, Nick. I don't know what that means. Dylan says, Jeff. Okay. Michael says, what do Benny Johnson, Vaush, and a vast gaping chasm all have in common? Can't wait for phase two. I don't know what that last part means. Alex says, beating women, based or cringe? Definitely cringe. It's definitely cringe to beat a woman. I am not in support of that. Harris Walker says, definitely not hilarious. Harris Walker says, imagine not trusting the plan. Couldn't be me. Hope you had a great day on this Epiphany, King. Well, thanks a lot, buddy. Can't imagine not trusting the plan, frankly. Anon says, if scene girls don't make a comeback, I'm ending it. This is what we mean by return to tradition. What we mean by return to tradition is listening to Hey Ya, Goth Girls, Crocs, you know, this is the real return to tradition, playing Minecraft. Negative Thoughts says, the Super Chats are going to be interesting tonight, yeah. Master of War says, no, don't, Sid. This will be quick. Look, I like you, Lolly Socks. You know a lot of the guys. I think you're a freak, but I like you. I don't even... No, don't sit. This will be quick. Look, I like you, Lolly Socks. And a lot of these guys, they think you're a freak, but I like you. I don't even know why I like you, but I got another complaint. It's starting to piss me off. Yeah, I guess it took a sign or something. He said he didn't give back a sign. That's pretty funny. I didn't know what that was for a second, but then I caught it. James Russell says, didn't know you wanted to replace Persepolis with a Catboy strip club. Yeah, well, I'm full of surprises like that. Anon says, LOL, Sean was on Twitter saying Trump lost 2020 and should be impeached because of the strike. Duganist Wignat's going full hysterical over based Iran. Yeah, well, Sean has a tendency to, black pill a little bit. I don't think that what Trump did was illegal. I just think it was a mistake. You know, Trump can use the military. Like, that's not... All these people, whenever they talk about the law, that's when they lose me, you know? Like, I'm with you. I'm against war with Iran. It's a big mistake. Could wind up losing 2020. If we get into a war with Iran, you lose the election, right? I mean, that's the least of our worries, if we get into a war with Iran. But, you know, people saying that, well, the reason why it was a mistake is because it violated international law. Like, that's so gay. You know, people saying, the reason the strike was bad is because Trump does not have the legal authority to do that. The president's a commander-in-chief. Come on. We can do what we want. So, that's where I have to draw the line. Like, war with Iran is bad. I'm with you. Shouldn't have done it. Yeah, I'm with you. Okay? But saying, like, Trump can't do it because the United Nations said X, Y, and Z. Well, fuck the United Nations. Who cares about the UN, you know? Who cares? UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Really? That's the problem here? Let's see. Ranch Pilled says, my first of many $2. By the way, Iran is not based. Iran is cringe. They're Muslim. Muslim countries cannot be based. Ranch Pilled says, my first of many $2 super chats of 2020, America First. Well, thanks a lot. Lucas says, debate Vaush. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about doing it. I saw that he did extend an invitation to me. The only problem is, generally speaking, I don't debate fat people. I generally don't really like to hang out with homosexuals. And also, you know, he's sort of ugly. He also has autism. So all of this is a recipe for actually not really a great debate. I'll do it on the Kill Stream. I'll do it on some kind of a third-party platform. It doesn't have to be the Kill Stream. But I watched Vaush's debate with Sargon. And first of all, Vaush, that totally vindicated what I said about him. For a long time, he said he wouldn't debate me, and I said I wouldn't debate him. And he said he wouldn't debate me because I'm a neo-Nazi, blah, blah, blah. And I said I wouldn't debate him because he has Asperger's. And it's not actually fun to debate somebody with Asperger's. I don't know if you've ever done that before. Because these people just, I mean, where does the term Sperg come from, okay? So if I get it, that's exactly what happened with Sargon. It's just the Sperging out over minutiae and, like, minor details. I watched that debate. It was painful. What is far right? They're talking about what far right means for like an hour, and, you know, Vaush keeps talking over and keeps interrupting, and it's the same thing with Destiny. You know, that's why the debates with Destiny aren't fun. They're just painful. Because the guy just like literally spurgs out. You know, the fast talking, the interrupting, the whatever. And Vaush has said in the past, after the Sargon debate, he said, well, I'm done doing debates on neutral platforms because Nazis can say whatever they want. It's like, that's kind of the point of a debate. You know, he wants it to be like, oh, you talk for as much as I want, and then I'm going to correct the record. And then you talk more, and then I correct the record. It's like, that's not a debate. That's like, that's controlled. That's completely controlled. Part of a debate is you have to hear out both sides. You can't, oh, well, this guy's literally Hitler, so, you know, he's subject to all these rules, and I get to interrupt him whenever I want. Like, that's not really a debate. That's really more, like, retarded. So I'll debate him on, like, a third-party platform, perhaps, you know, if there is such a fair platform where there's a moderator and they're in the middle. Maybe Nuance Bro can moderate, right, or somebody like that. But I'm not gonna go on his channel and just be spurred out at by some fat homo. I'm gonna get banned. It's not 2020 is not off to a good start. I'm gonna get banned already. I keep forgetting the community guidelines. You can't say these kinds of things anymore. Kidding. I don't mean that. Blah blah blah. Yeah. I forgot. I've been away for a week. I forgot the community guidelines are super dumb now. You can't make fun of anything. Racist Incels is going to be a Chad and Go Premium. Oh, great. Prince of Zamunda says, LMAO, World War III, but everybody's talking about Catboys. Yeah, you love to see it, right? We're on the brink of war with Iran, and people are, Nick, you hung out with this guy? John Smith says, Lollipop Socks promotes cartoon pedophilia, worst optics. You know, you just don't get it. Racist Incels says, do you think America's two-party system restricts our ideas from becoming mainstream? Perhaps. You know, I don't really like to think about... Whenever people say two-party system, my eyes sort of glaze over because it's just like sort of a useless conversation. You know what I mean? What if America had a multi-party democracy? Probably everything would be different. You know, I don't know what to tell you, right? You could say that in... You could look at other countries where they have multiple parties, but I would say that in like the United Kingdom, does the multi-party system really allow like our ideas to flourish? Look at the results of the last election. The Brexit Party got zero, right? What was the other one? BNP used to be a party. They've been like dead forever. So how's that going, you know? The conservatives and I don't know, I'm not like an expert on the electoral systems, but in the United Kingdom system, it's like obviously they have two major parties and then some, you know, they've got the Green Party and the Lib Dems and others. But even in a system where they have more than two parties, you don't really see like a real nationalist force, at least not yet. Conversely, in Italy, you do. You know, in Italy, they've got Lega, which is now the biggest party in Italy. And they're, you know, going against the Five Star Movement, which is an anti-establishment party, or the traditional, was it Forza Italia or some of the, I'm not an expert on international, you know, domestic politics. Well, you know what I mean, domestic politics in other countries. But in Italy, their multi-party system has given way to a legitimate reactionary nationalist party. So I guess it's really, you know, honestly, I think it's more dependent on the country itself. But probably the two-party system is a hindrance to our goals. I would say it probably is. America First Jews says, welcome back, King. Sorry about the cringe. Fags on the timeline. True Nickers are ride or die, and we still got your back. Hope you enjoyed your vacation. Well, thanks a lot, big guy. Yeah, I mean, look, you just got to trust the plan. I'm waiting for, I'll go off on the Catboy thing in a moment. I'm waiting for a good super chat. I'm waiting for a well-formed question before I launch into it in full. Helios says, I've got a half Asian GF. Is it still cringe or no? Yeah, it's kind of cringe, dude. Racist Incel says, have you ever been to Europe? Yeah, I've been to Czech Republic. Ragnarok says, Groiper, terrorist cell, claims responsibility. And the allergies are back, too. I got a brief respite from the allergies when I was in the desert. Groiper terrorist cell claims responsibility for leaking documents revealing Vouch to be a fat pedophile. Yeah, yeah. Groiper leaks. Groiper leaks reveals Vouch is gay and fat. Glenn C says, forgot to tell you, I showed my dad the clip of you talking to Ben Shapiro, who he likes a lot, and he said there was nothing wrong with what you did. Oh, well, good to hear. I did nothing wrong. I never do anything wrong. It's always just people lying, exaggerating, bad faith actors, FUD, it's FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt, posting. Punish Chewy says, thoughts on getting enrolled in the brown scapular. It's a powerful weapon against sin and the devil. I don't know what a brown, I know what it is, but I don't really know that much about it. Billy Mays says, Big Chungus 2020, hashtag die for Chungreel. Thank you for that. Can Nat says, Nick, it feels like the Groiper movement is going the way of Kekistan. Much hypocrisy and neoconism. Twitter cringe, reflect. That's all wrong. Nobody's a neocon here. This happens every time. Every time something happens with foreign policy, I tell you, I don't support war, but, you know, there's nuance to it. And people say, neocon, neocon. If you watch this show, you know I'm not a neocon. I have had a show that has literally been taken off my channel. It was all about the Israel lobby and the ADL and AIPAC and, you know, everything that goes on. Pollard and all these people. You know, everybody knows I'm not a neocon. But, you know, whenever I do a show and I don't just give you an autistic, like, war bad take, then, you know, people want to call me a neocon. But, you know, as I've never supported a war with Iran. I'm against war in Iraq, against the war in Syria, whatever, you know. And this Groiper going the way of Kekistan, This is a line of thinking that was literally created by Brittany Venti. So, you know, good luck. All these people, it's like, oh, I'm perpetuating like a disingenuous and harmful narrative created by people that want to hurt us. Oh, yeah. Reflect on that. I'm reflecting on that by saying, you know, Vaush peddling the stuff is a communist and a pedophile. Brittany Venti is an e-girl, and people are like listening to that. So I don't think that's happening. But if you feel that's happening, then, you know, don't watch the show. Join the other reactionary movement, by all means. Do your own show. Lord Yeetus says, how does anal sex with cowboys win the culture war? It doesn't, but that hasn't happened. So Colton says, see the new guy memes creator committed Sudoku. New guy meme creator? What's the new guy meme? New guy refers to a character comic strip. I don't really know anything about this. I didn't see that. New guy is a wholesome meme format created as a response to a bitter comic. I see. Well, I had never even seen this meme before, actually, so I can't really react to it. Let's see. Evner says, new evidence revealed linking Hillary Clinton to Epstein. Google the Lichter Report. I will do that. Thomas says, God is going to punish you for promoting neocon Middle Eastern policy. Here we go. And associating with cross-dressing degenerates. Okay, well, thank you for the money. Racist incel says, do you gel your hair? I might adopt the style. I actually don't gel my hair. I just dry it, and then I just comb it. I know it's hard to believe. Charlie Kirk says, me pulling in the drive-thru. Yeah, can I get 3 5-layer burritos and a Baja Blast? Taco Bell cashier. Maybe it's time for a fully independent Kurdistan in what is currently northern Iraq. Everybody, who even asked? There's an expletive there that I censored. Who the F even asked? I don't really understand the joke, but yeah, there's some truth in that. I saw there, who said that this week? Some like neocon said that about Kurdistan. Was that like Bill Kristol? I feel like it was like Brett Stevens or Bill Kristol, but somebody, I think I saw that on Twitter. Yeah, you love to see it. But that's ultimately the end game. That was the end game behind the Iraq war from the beginning for decades. That was in the works for decades. They want Iraq to be 3 countries. They want Iraq to be a Kurdish, they want Iraqi Kurdistan, a Sunni Iraq country, and a Shiite Iraq country. And they want Syria to be 4 countries. They want a Kurdish Syria, Sunni Shiite Syria, Alawite Syria. They want Iran to be split up. These people in Israel, they wanted to, they lay it out. Oded Yonan's 1980s plan, it says that they want to create a mosaic of tribes with flags. That's the terminology used. A mosaic of tribes with flags. What is a mosaic? A bunch of countries smashed into little pieces. A mosaic, you know, of all these different little polities that can be dominated, that they can be overcome by Israel. Because, you know, Israel's not stupid. They fight 4 wars with the Arabs, and they say, we don't like fighting, you know, powerful, autocratic, strong Arab governments. Let's destroy them from the inside. We're tired of defeating, you know, the United Arab Republic. We're tired of defeating Saddam Hussein, whatever. What we want is just a bunch of little tribes that can't defend themselves instead. That's the game plan. Ogurk says, bomb, bomb, bomb Iran, says some dead neocon. Yeah. R.A. says, past week, for some reason, I remembered all the times last decade when people who felt slighted by me told blatant lies about me. More than degeneracy, it's the lying that makes me go off. Don't know how you deal with it, Nick. It's hard. And that's what it's been. That's what it's been for the past 3 months, is lies. And that's exactly it, is, you know, for me, a very honest person, obviously, you know, for somebody that has staked my reputation, my life on telling the truth about the world, honesty, the truth, it's something that matters very much to me. And so when people lie about politics, that irritates me. But when people lie about me, well, it irritates me more. So, yeah, I guess I'm just extremely tough. I guess I'm just the toughest guy in the world. But I'm waiting. You know, I want to look. We have to address the cowboy thing at some point tonight. Everybody's so concerned about it. I was waiting for a good question about it, but I might as well address it. You know, I did a stream with Lolly Socks. He's now known as Cowboy Cammy. He changed his name. I advise him to change his name because, you know, Lolly Sox, not great optics. Frankly, I didn't necessarily, like, I didn't put my stamp of approval on Catboy Cammy. I was like, it's not really, I mean, it's a little, Lolly Sox, it's hard to be worse than that. But, you know, is that really better, Catboy Cammy? In any case, this guy, if you don't know who he is, he's been on the Weekly Sweat. I did a stream with him, like, last month. He was a DLive streamer. He would stream 24/7 on DLive. And he would do these, like, Filthy Frank-style lifestyle streams. He was on 24/7. So he had his wall papered over with, like, anime posters. He would go out to anime conventions and other things wearing anime dresses. And he would do IRL, like, lifestyle content. You know, I don't approve of everything anybody I've ever hung out with has ever done, obviously, right? But that is the context. He's based in Red Pill. You know, I caught a couple of his streams and he watched Greatest Story Never Told. Okay, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. Damn it, you know, whatever. Well, okay. So he watched a documentary and I don't approve of that documentary, but you let it slip, right? But, so, you know, talk about letting things slip. It's things like that that slip, not other things. So he was watching a certain six-hour documentary. I'm just going to pretend that didn't happen. He was watching a certain six-hour documentary. He was red-pilling people on HBD, all kinds of things. And I'm like, okay, this guy's, like, based in Red Pill. And I put in a couple of chats on DLive, and I said, like, you know, what's the deal with, like, the anime costumes? What's the deal with, like, other things that you're doing? And he said, well, you know, you see, the point of the anime stuff, the point of the getup is because it's funny or it gets attention. It's disarming, you know, and people are not as reactive to certain things if you're wearing a costume. You know, that was the gist of it. I was like, oh, okay. Because at first I had the same reaction. I'm like, here's this guy who's doing weird things. What's the deal with that? You know, how are you based in Red Pill, but you're doing weird things? And he explained it to me. And he came out to the United States to do IRL streams. And we did a stream together like last month, okay? This was 4 weeks ago. And people made a big deal out of it at the time. We did a 10-hour lifestyle stream. We like got lunch. We went to an arcade. We did a few things, you know? And at the time, it was like a little controversial because this was fresh off the Milo thing. Everybody was up in arms about the Milo thing. Oh, he's on the Milo show. And then the Lolly Sox thing happened. And oh, everybody gave me our time about that. But then it blew over. You know, then everyone like got over it. Whatever, it was a stream, not a big deal. And then, much more recently, this Vouch guy found it, I guess. He found it, because this is like a four-week-old stream, and everybody saw it, everybody got over it. And then this guy, Vouch, found it, and he made a video, or then he just started lying about what happened. He said that I flew this guy out to the United States, which is not true. He said I put him up at hotel, which is not true. He said that all kinds of other things. He said this guy's a sex worker, which is not true. He said that the streamer is gay, which is not true. You know, the streamer in question, Lolly Sox, Catboy Cammy, is not a homosexual. You know, that's just not true. So if anybody can find any evidence to the contrary on any of these points, feel free to share it. But, you know, for the most part, it's been a lot of lies, exaggeration, misinterpretation by bad faith actors, by people that are willfully lying. The Vouch guy, who made the video where a lot of that has originated, is a far-left Marxist pedophile. He is homosexual himself. He's obese. He has said that he's in favor of violence against right-wing people. He says, I'm like the most influential neo-Nazi in the Western Hemisphere. And he made a video gloating and lying about this stream. And people are like taking all that at face value and saying, Nick, care to explain this? Care to explain this? So, I don't know. I think I've addressed most of the contentions there, but it's really not. You know, when people say, Nick, I trust the plan, but don't say you trust the plan, but you must trust the plan. If we can't survive things like this, it's never going to work. Because this has been going, you know, the bigger picture here, the bigger story, is that for 3 months, it has been constant FUD tactics. It has been constant lying, slandering, misdirection. You know what FUD is? Fear, uncertainty, doubt. That is the tactic of the enemy. And it's been all kinds of things for the past 3 months, but you just haven't noticed it, right? It's been Groiper Grifter. Nick attacked Ben Shapiro's family. Nick denies the Holocaust. Nick is a Chinese agent. Nick was trying to dox people at Groiper Leadership Summit. Nick is a neocon, and this is the latest one. Right, and people want to make, oh, but this is a big deal. This is why you have to trust the plan. Don't believe everything you hear and see on the internet. So that's my clarification. The guy's totally based in red pill. He's not gay. I'm not gay. You know, nothing happened. People watched the stream and, you know, a stream where we like play arcade games, and Vaush is like, well, look, in this picture, Nick looks at him and they're laughing. Oh, yeah. Well, he goes, well, I guess that's a date then. Look, they're laughing at each other the whole time. Oh, yeah, a couple of guys hanging out. Well, it must be a date, right? But let's see. So that's the some people are confused. I posted about this on Twitter. I'm probably blowing it way out of proportion, but a very dedicated and persistent group of people who I imagine are not good faith actors have been pushing this hard on social media. But it is important to clarify for the record. It's important to clarify for the record if there are people that do support me that are confused or whatever. It's important to correct the record, make sure everybody's on board. I would not be promoting somebody who is a homosexual. He is not a homosexual. You know, you could ask him, you could go to his Twitter timeline. Anybody who watches his streams know this too, by the way. You know, we've been hanging out for the past couple of weeks, and it's like this guy's like a Chad. He slays femoids, you know? So it's not like what people are portraying it to be. So in any case, we're going to get back to the super chats here. I'm sure it'll come up in further super chats, but hopefully that puts it to bed. Hopefully that's the final clarification. People are saying, well, how was it misinformation? We saw it. I tweeted today. So this is the guy pushing the disinfo, which is Vaush, who is a pedophile. And they're like, what disinfo? We saw it. Saw what? People hanging out? Vaush said, you know, there were so many lies that were told in that video. Anyway, but we got to get back to the super chat. So that does frustrate me because it's lies. But that's the problem. It's like, and I said this about the China thing. People said that I was like a Chinese operative. And I said this on a stream before. I said, the problem is you get to a certain level and people just make things up about you. And if you address it, well, you make it bigger than it is sometimes. Or if you deny it too much, then it like legitimizes. You know what I mean? It's like when you ask a loaded question and you ask somebody like, why do you stop? What is the expression? When did you start beating your wife or whatever? Something like that. And so in sort of answering, it almost legitimizes the question itself. And it's a very frustrating part about being famous is that people can and do literally just invent things, create fiction out of thin air. But anyway, let's see. Racist incel says, is Alex Jones a paleoconservative? Not really. I think he's a libertarian. Let's see. Quality Content says, if you support Trump, you are not America first, you are Israel first. This entire attack was so Benjamin Netanyahu would win his re-election. I don't know if that's necessarily true, the part about just being for Benjamin Netanyahu. Certainly, I'm sure he had a hand in this. But no, I don't think supporting Trump is Israel first, only because the Democrats are Israel first, too. I mean, let's not be under any illusions. Excuse me. You know, just look at like Nancy Pelosi. Anytime Ilhan Omar raises like completely legitimate skepticism of the Israel lobby, Nancy Pelosi like has the whole party shut her down. You know, so it's like, oh, well, Trump is Israel first. Yeah, well, yeah, but, you know, so are the Democrats. So it's like, do you want somebody that's Israel first that's going to, you know, maybe have a shot at doing something about immigration? It's more sympathetic to us. Or do you want somebody that's effectively Israel first, but it's going to put us in jail for being white nationalists, you know, because that's what we get with the Democrats. So to me, it's really, if somebody could come up with a counter argument for that, I'd love to hear it. But all I hear is the same dogmatic, Trump is Israel first. Trump, you know, there's a lot of evidence to support this, but it doesn't really change the calculation. RA, it's like, so what? I mean, who's not Israel first at the national level in Washington? Can you find anybody? And if you can, show me somebody that's not Israel first. I don't think that's possible, but if you find somebody that's Israel first, show me it's better than Trump. That to me is the question. RA says, I would hope for you having to deal with fewer lies, but I know they won't stop. So I'll hope instead that you have an epic year shutting them all down. Well, thanks a lot. It's going to be a great year. Look, I am a very inflappable person. You cannot get me down very easily. Racist incel says, Bobby Shmurda gets out December 11th, 2020. Big year, big year. Matthew says, optics check on the picture with the rifle. Heard Illinois has some red flag laws. Happy New Year. Also, what's your New Year's resolution this year? God bless. Yeah. I didn't post that picture. That was Zoomer Matt, which, you know, I don't post pictures of the guns lately for that reason. But I didn't really make any New Year's resolutions, honestly. Is that bad? I was on vacation. I was so just like schmooting. And we really didn't do a lot of like the proper New Year's type stuff. You know, it's a lot of gamers. We don't really do the conventional stuff. I didn't really make any New Year's resolutions. I don't know. I guess my New Year's resolution is to be a gamer. I don't know. Be a gamer, be more epic. Steve be like, or Steve, Steve says, Nibbas be like. Nibbas be like, Catboys, ew, disavow now and go watch porn 5 minutes later. LMAO, couldn't be me, trust the plan. I mean, look, I get it. Based on how people are misrepresenting it, I get why people would be like weirded out by it. But you have to understand it in context. You know, would anybody get mad at Sam Hyde for dressing up like a girl in World Peace? Does anybody say, oh, Sam Hyde dressed up like a girl in that episode of World Peace? You know, Sam Hyde dressed up like Jennifer Aniston in his speech at, what school was that? I forget what school, but you know, he did that college speech. Would anybody begrudge him for that? Well, no, because you understand the context of what was happening there. So when people say, oh, he's promoting degeneracy, it's like, well, let's look at the context. If I was promoting Lady Maga, who is unironically a drag queen homosexual, well, that would be one thing. But to be promoting somebody that is a straight red pill Chad who's doing a bit, who's obviously doing a joke, well, that's something else. In any case, well, whatever. I've said my piece on this. Duke says, who's getting deported first, Michael Moore or Ilhan Omar? Neither, frankly. I guess Ilhan Omar. Austin says, use my Super Chat money to get Jaden out of the hood. Jaden McNeil, yeah, Jaden's got a very, he's a very urban guy. I'll just put it that way. He's got to become who he is. His blood needs to remember. Racist incel says, Nick, you've left me no choice but to stand. Yeah, in many cases. Elston says, listen to some of your old shows while you're on vacation and someone super chatted a Hail Mary that you thought was last rites. Pray the rosary. I don't think that happened. I don't remember that. Dylan says, feds in chat, more interested in Catboys in World War III. Yeah, for real. Evner says, the Virgin seeing Star Wars 9 with the boys on opening night versus the Chad watching Cats with the Catboys in an empty theater. Yeah, yeah. I did see Star Wars 9, did not see Cats. But yeah, I am okay. Thank you for that, I guess. Racist incel says, just found out about Dries Van Langenhove and saw that you were mutuals. He seems like such a cool guy. Totally based, totally Chad, yeah. I've talked to him a couple of times on Instagram. I didn't know who he was. He followed me, and I saw the check mark, and I was like, oh, a fellow check mark, you know? And I checked out his account, and I'm like, this guy's pretty epic. So yeah, he's a Chad. We need people like that in America. Aquatic-based Nibba says, Iran fails the vibe check. UNESCO about to get its shit pushed in. We don't care about your heritage sites. You know, I have to say, there is something, I don't know. Is this just foolish of me to say? But to me, it will never not be funny to be unironically jingoist, or rather, ironically jingoistic. It will never not be funny to say, America, pushing your shit in, you know, fuck your UNESCO heritage sites, we're gonna bomb everything. That will never not be funny to me. People that have this, like, people that are isolationist or non-interventionist, we might agree on substance, but the posting, the energy is all wrong. You know, they're all so, like, butthurt and coping. Well, how does it feel that you're, like, Israel first? It's like, how do you feel that you're a bitch and we're going to blow up UNESCO heritage sites? You know what I mean? The energy, and I'm talking purely in terms of memes, in terms of irony, being funny, in other words, not serious. I will never not find that funny. I will never not, you know, be on the wrong side of that one. That is maybe the problem, is post-irony. You know, do people want me to do the serious show? Hello, everybody. This is I'm unironically a 21-year-old college dropout wearing a suit doing a very serious political show, giving you completely serious political takes, and I'll never joke and kid. It's like, is that what people want? But that's what they try to do, is they try to subvert the most fun aspect of the show, which is the humor, the good humor, the good-naturedness of it. Neocon Nick! Because I'm on Call of Duty saying, another dead Iranian, blowing up UNESCO heritage sites. You know, obviously, I don't support destroying cultural monuments, right? Obviously, I don't support destroying history. I love history. Okay, do I have to explain the joke to you? But it is funny to say, fuck it, mask off, war with Iran, you know, war with the tranny nation. So, But, you know, boomers be like, Neocon Nick. And what about it? Let's see. Sammy Davis Jr. says, for what it's worth, you are going to have to deal with the flack like this sooner or later, being in the spotlight, batting down the hatches, I guess. Yeah, I can deal with it. I'm stronger than all the forces arrayed against me combined. That's the difference. I'm the best. So, you know, good luck trying to come for my crown. Good luck trying to come for my throne. Why do you think I sit on the throne? I earned it. I'm the best. So, you know, you're going to have to try a little harder than what we saw this week. Derpy says, we live in an Assassin's Creed, but with drones, man. Yeah. Jewel says, hope you had a good vacation. Happy New Year, King. Thanks, buddy. Happy New Year to you, too. Jude says, this guy online told me to get a GF because it was easy. So I told him to STFU. Then this femoid said, if I wanted to get a girlfriend, I should fall in love naturally and not force it. Based or cringe? I would say, kind of cringe. My view of relationships is very, like, pragmatic. You know, the way that I think about it is really, you need to find somebody. I mean, yeah, find someone you're in love with, but here's the thing. There are biological realities. So the media is telling you, like, you know, like, you can fall in love. You can find the right person when you're 45. It's like women don't have that. They don't have that luxury. And a lot of men don't either, by the way. You know, it's better for people to get married sooner rather than later because you want to have kids. You want to get your life figured out. If you're a Catholic, you know, you can't start living with your wife until you get married. You can't start, you know, having sex with your wife until you get married. There's a lot of things. You're meant to get married young, really. And with women in particular, your eggs dry up by the time you're 30, 35. So, you know, waiting to fall in love is not really like a great strategy. You know, find somebody that, you know, works. Find somebody that, you know, works, you're compatible. And, you know, you can fall in love with anybody as a guy. Come on, you can fall in love with anybody, really. And, you know, and you got to start saving the white race. That's how I feel about it. Josh to remove. But, you know, make sure it's compatible. Don't jump into anything and it ends in divorce or it gets ugly, you know. Find the right person, but there is some urgency. Josh the Remover says, all these cringe lords shitting on you for hanging out with Lolly Socks are idiots. Her, der, Nick is friends with gay dude. Nick gay now, LOL. Well, and the best part is, neither of us are gay. He's not gay, I'm not gay. So, let's see. Joseph says, the people disingenuously freaking out about Lolly Socks just don't get Frog Chan Twitter culture, which has always been a source of vitality for us. That's a big part of it, too. Is people, the memes are inaccessible for a lot of boomers, a lot of people that are not, don't really get the culture. Like, if you never watched Sam Hyde, if you never watched Filthy Frank, if you never watched a lot of internet stuff, if you're not on 4chan, you're not going to get, like, the anime thing. You're going to see anime and be like, oh, that's horribly degenerate. Now, in some cases, it is, but there's also context there. And it is, when you say it's a source of vitality, that's another point. You know, people that want to make this an extremely gay movement where you have to disavow everything and, I can't do that. That's not serious enough. I can't do that. I'm the leader of a movement. I do a show. I do an entertainment show on YouTube, and I'm an entertaining guy, you know? And if it turns into a political movement, that'd be great. But that this kind of, like, you know, bitchy, pussy, we have to be totally, you know, totally buttoned up and can't joke around and can't be funny and have to mind our P's and Q's and disavowals, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. That's not how it happened in 2016. It's not going to happen like that in 2020. Racist incels has walked down the stairs, ended up on another floor. Fat Nibba says, LOL, logo for the World Heritage Convention, literally a black cube. They want you to know, but they want you to act like you don't know. Well, I don't even know if it's that, but yeah, the black cube thing is really something you're going to want to look into. I'll just say that much. I'll just say, ever since I started naming the cube, the shilling has been off the charts. Ever since I started naming the black cube, all of a sudden, 10 shill threads on 4chan, you know, fake accounts on Twitter, zero followers, zero following, one tweet, created January 2020. Ever since I started talking about the black cube, all of a sudden, what are they hiding? What do they not want you to know? Saturn, the cube, the memorial, the star, the elements, okay, the numerology. It's all very interesting. But no, shill harder against Nick. Another Wishful Zoomer says, welcome back, big guy. Hoping your New Year's break was a pleasant one. Well, hey, thanks, big guy. Hope you enjoyed your New Year's Eve. Friend of the show, Wishful Zoomer. Anon says, Leftoids and Wignats and chat. I'm LMAOing at your life. Yeah, me too. Me too, bro. I don't take it too seriously. Throb Schneider says, so let me get this straight. Basically, nuke the entire world then? You got it. Trebles says, if Trump is not reelected, what type of future do you see and how should we prepare for it? Te amo mucho, feliz ano nuevo. Well, gracias. Let's try and keep it English in chat, please. But thanks. Appreciate the sentiment. Happy New Year. If Trump is not reelected, what type of future? I don't know, man. I don't even know what the election's going to look like. We don't even know who the candidate's going to be. So if we don't know who the candidate's going to be on the left, we don't know what the White House is going to look like. But I can tell you that if we lose the election, I mean, it's going to be over. I think when Trump leaves office, it's going to be over. It's, you know, in some sense, it's, I don't mean to blackpill you here, but, you know, in some capacity, it's been over for a long time. But Trump is sort of like the last dying gasp. He's like sort of holding the line here so that we can escape, so that we can kind of get our shit together before, like, it's over for good. You know what I mean? He's sort of, I don't know what a good analogy would be for that, but he's kind of just like holding it together just long enough. Get out of here, escape, exchange phone numbers, get connected, whatever. I can't hold on much longer. That's what Trump is doing. But eventually Democrats are going to take over and then it's the end, you know, and then it's the, you know, 1,000 years of darkness. So American Spoons has found you on the 60 Minutes clip. Love your content. Hey, well, thanks. Glad that was positive. Simon Scullis says, what do you think of Soleimani's replacement, Grand Admiral Thrawn? I don't know who that is. Labrin says, 2,020 years ago, Epiphany was about Jews and Persians having a birthday party together. Let's just say relations have deteriorated since then. Yeah, that's true. Paul says, your boos mean nothing to me. I've seen what makes you cheer, says Ricky Gervais. That's kind of a baseline. Super says, please address the Catboy question. I did that. Catboys are based, always have been. I love that this was the thing that they decided to go after me about. I've joked about, like, gamer girl pee. I've joked about, like, all kinds of weird things. A lot of weird tummy, like, a lot of weird things on the show. Other things. And nobody gets on my case, but you do 1,000 episodes of America First, and nobody says you're a podcaster. You hang out with one catboy, and all of a sudden, Sam Jones says, is libertarianism a necessary step to becoming conservative? If so, what's the best way to convert? And if not, how do people jump from being culturally left, right, from being culturally left to being right with nothing in between? I don't believe in any necessary steps. I think that, you know, the libertarian to, like, dissident right pipeline existed because of the, like, particular cultural context of the, like, early 2010s, in the sense that, at least in my experience, the only real, like, legitimate dissent against neocons and fusionists was coming from libertarians. Do you know what that means? Conservatism since Reagan has been dominated by fusionists. It's the Warhawks, neoliberals, and the religious right, the social conservatives. The only people that were opposed to that sort of establishment fusionist idea of conservatism in the mainstream were libertarians. That's not to say that paleocons never existed. That's not to say that the alt-right didn't exist or anything else for that matter. But at the time, like, Ron Paul led the charge against the establishment. You know, he was on the stage in 08, he was on the stage in 2012, and he kind of set the tone for a lot of not exactly mainstream conservatives, right? I would say even to an extent, Crowder, Shapiro even, Prager, a lot of these guys. You know, in a lot of ways, they are mainstream establishment guys, but at the time, in like the 2010s or whatever, they were voicing a little bit more of an aggressive form of conservatism than one existed, which was like Mitt Romney and George Bush and whatever. That's not to say they weren't neocons and they weren't, you know, free marketeers or whatever, but I think that a lot of what existed at the time in the mainstream was libertarian, you know. A lot of the most prominent anti-war stuff on the right came from the libertarians. A lot of the most prominent, you know, anti-establishment stuff on the right came from the libertarians. So I would say that it was sort of more about that cultural moment that libertarians were the dissent. They were the dissidents. So I think that's why it happened. I would have to think, that's sort of a complicated question. I'd have to think long and hard. There's some more issues-based things there as well, but that's what happened to me at least. I would say that no, it's really not. I don't think anything's necessary. I think it just clicks. Depending on whether you're libertarian or left-wing or Bernie bro, whatever, I think it just clicks eventually. And everyone's evolving constantly, but at a certain point, it just kind of clicks. And no, some people evolve out of this movement. So to subscribe to this like spectrum idea that you've got to go from one to the other, I don't agree with that idea of it. Dramatic Dodo says, did you see Michael Jones on Iranian News? Do you agree with his take? I didn't see him, so I don't know what his take is. Mongo says, first super chat opening, stick with you, big man. Well, thanks, buddy. Can Nat says, Nick, you can't call out Kirk for promoting based fags. You do the exact same thing with Milo and Lolly Socks. But that's literally not what's happening. You know, Charlie Kirk goes on a college tour, and he says, there's nothing wrong with being a gay conservative. Charlie Kirk says that. He has people on stage that say that. You go to his booth at Turning Point USA, and they've got stickers that have a AR-15 and a rainbow flag. Okay, they're actively promoting homosexuality and normalizing it. That is contrasted with me, where I went on Milo's stream and said to his face, you know, being gay is degenerate, and I don't believe in that. Going on his platform, not inviting him onto mine. In the case of Lolly Socks, you know, he's not even a homosexual. So I've heard a lot of people making that argument. You're no better than Charlie Kirk. Oh, yeah, except it's completely different. And I heard all that during the Milo thing. You need to reflect on why you're a fucking retard, okay? And why all that's like, doesn't even make any sense. It's a non sequitur. Sonny says, I found out your name is censored in Roblox, LMAO. Yeah, that's old news. Anon says, Ricky Gervais' speech was Reddit tier. Funny TV rich man say rich man bad and Epstein didn't kill himself. People acting like he started naming them. Yeah, I know, right? My thoughts exactly. Let's see. Steadfast Reactionary says, when the Lord rained down brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens, thus he destroyed these cities and the entire plan, including all the catboys of the cities. Ah, base, dude. Jared said, if you had to join the military, what type of job would you want? Gunner. I don't know. What jobs are there in the military? What would I be in the military? I'd want to be an officer. I would want to be a general. I'd want to be the guy calling the shots in the back. Maybe I'd be a UAV pilot. I'd be playing video games. RA says, could you please give a shout-out to this young, up-and-coming gamer named Jaden McNeil for spending the entire day bravely struggling through a very tough game on DLive? Solid Snake believes in you, Jaden. Yeah. Good luck, Jaden. Hope it's going well. I haven't talked to Jaden in a long time. I got to call him. Brandon says, America First goes on break for 1 week and everyone loses their mind. Yeah. But I'm back. Don't worry. Austin says, Ted Cruz on the Iran bombing. It is also long overdue justice for our Israeli allies. Then Netanyahu claims they had no part in it. Well, we know that every hostility, well, most of the hostilities with Iran is driven by Israel. You know, I mean, a big part, not only does Iran want a nuclear weapon to protect against America, but also against Israel, because Israel is the only country in the Middle East with a nuclear arsenal. So, yeah, a lot of it's driven by Israel. Let's see. Duke says, Nick, some femoid recently gave 24 guys oral sex for a 3-pound bottle of champagne. What sentence should she get? I'm thinking 25 years hard labor. 24 years. One for every guy. One for every guy. Hard labor. I agree. Respawn Master says, I'm 17 and I'm doing a show for my school, Catholic Teaching with My Name, a 15-part series of authentic teaching with good political commentary. That's very cool. I wish you luck with that. Hope it goes well. You're learning from the master of the craft here. No one says $151 for a Cook County license plate sticker. Thanks. Mateo says, watch, but thanks for the $2, by the way. Mateo says, watch the chat and got a strong urge to throw myself under a train. Didn't know so many Wignats were sub 50 IQ. Vouch fans screeching about catboys. Yeah, hearing about that. Minnesota Groiper says, hey, Nick, good to have you back. I'm a recent college grad, and I'm happy that I can now contribute to the America First movement with my first big wagey bucks job. The bet is paying off. I'm being vindicated on my strategy here. Keep doing what you're doing and ignore all the detractors. See you guys at CPAC. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for the big super chat. Glad you are now in the world. Glad you're in the working world earning the big wagey bucks. It is fortuitous for us all. It's a great thing for the movement, for you and for me, and for the Groypers, right? But yeah, see you at CPAC, bro. Superorganism says, Vaush is the definitive reason why the modern left deserves no respect. Also, E. Michael Jones is spot on about Iran. No surprise there. Yeah, Vaush is repulsive. And he represents the left, you know, physically repulsive and, you know, just sort of gross. It's a sort of gross guy. And, you know, dishonest, nasty guy. Philia says, welcome back, Nick. I think some people lost their minds while you were on vacation. America First withdrawal is a real issue. Yeah, started to get the, get scratching all over the bugs. The bugs are coming back. They're hallucinating, seeing things. That's how it goes. They're getting the shakes. They're getting the shakes without America First. Many such cases. Henry Yeats with a big super chat. Thanks a lot. He says, a lot of new people. Listen, 2 or 3 years ago, we all decided here at Knicker Nation that the massages from Catboys is not and never will be gay. Trust the plan. Okay, I think we should say it's important to clarify that it's not the official, it's not the unironic position. But it is true. Trust the plan. Jeff says, Kensney, if you are watching, I'd like to audition for Folk Salad. Ahem. AIDS Patient Zero, redefining the term Bugman. Thanks also, black people. Okay, don't know what that means, but thanks for that. Mike says, Nibbas aren't trusting the plan, and it shows. I find it really funny that all of this pops up again 1 month later because a communist pedophile told them to. Anyways, keep it up and welcome back. Well, thanks a lot. Well, and that's the thing. The timing of it is amazing, too. This is a month old. Stream is a month old. People, were upset about it for like a second, got over it. And then a month later, I mean, that is what has instigated the recent unrest that I have to crush like the IRGC, crush dissent. It's because of this guy. It's because of this fat pedophile. And people are like, I don't see anything wrong with this. Super Mega says, Michelle Malkin will be speaking and having a book signing in New York City next week. I hope to see other fans in the area show her love. It's through Eventbrite. Yeah, well, I hope she has a great event. She's really a treasure. Our girl. Mayor says, Iran and North Korea are the only countries without a private banking system. If war does go down, it was never about oil in the first place. I don't even know if that's true. I just see people say that all the time. Did you know that they're the only countries without a Rothschild bank? I don't know if that's true, but maybe it is. Joseph says, no, you can't just stand next to a Chad Memer. No. Yeah, right? That's literally what it is. Mr. Camus says, which ethnicity were the best colonizers, Nick? The best colonizers? Well, that's an interesting question. Better for whom? For whom? In what sense? According to what standard? Probably the Anglo, honestly. They are good settlers. They created infrastructure, railroads. They were very good at what they did. They also, well, at least in America, they set up like a legitimate colony, not just like dominion over the natives. They sent settlers to settle the land and take over it. So probably the English. Let's see. Torn Beast says Twitter is gay. Hashtag free Zoomer Matthew. Yeah, big agree. Priority One says Dave Smith spoke fondly of you on episode 527 of his show around the 1 hour mark. He has to invite you back on a show, or can you invite yourself? It's very rude to invite yourself, so I'm going to wait for him to invite me back. But I like that guy. I think he's great. I think he's brilliant. I think he's honest. He's one of the few people I could say I honestly like. I associate with a lot of people. I'll just put it that way. And he is one person in politics that I genuinely had a conversation with him and liked him. I'm like, this guy is honest, good intentioned, and I personally like him, So I can't say enough positive things about Dave Smith. Jim says, imagine pagans and atheists lecturing us about sexual morality. Yeah, right. Well, it's a lot of the bat people. A lot of the bat people are like, oh, see? It's literally all gay people are now turning around and saying, you called us gay, but now we're calling you gay. Okay, fag, still not gay, and you're still going to hell. But that's literally Vaush, the BAP crew, all these guys. They're all those, all the people peddling this are gay themselves. are saying, Nick called us fags, and turns out nothing. Turns out you're still going to hell, and I'm still based. And Lolly socks to Chad, who Fs girls, and you're still going to hell. So that's what I think about that. Polish American says, back from spreading Catholicism in Guatemala. I need to get situated here. I need to get comfortable. Back from spreading Catholicism in Guatemala, prayed several rosary decades for you in America first. Hope you had a refreshing break from cringe super chats. Yeah, it was a refreshing break. It was nice to step away for a moment. Avalon says, hey, Nick, what's your favorite Star Wars land vehicle? Also, check out Dova Hattie's Unbiased History of Rome. I think you would love it. I'll check that out. Favorite land vehicle from Star Wars? It's a good question. I would say, let's think. Land vehicles. We've got the clones, we've got the droids, we've got the Empire, and to a lesser extent, the Rebels. I would say probably the AT-AT. You know, it's got to be the most iconic land vehicle. Then again, you've got swoop bikes, you've got AT-ST, AT-RT. I mean, there's a lot of cool ones. The Juggernaut. You know, there's a lot. There's a lot that you could say is cool, is good. But I'd probably go with the classic AT-ST. AT-ST or AT-AT would be my favorites. Avalon says, hey, Nick, what's your... I just read that. Serpent says, pee-pee-poo-poo. Fitting. Alternate Cack says, Wignats, two dudes laughing? That's a gay conspiracy. Mention only blankly stare at paint. Vouch and Owen Shills Spurging. My friend Kyle says, hi. Oh, hi. Yeah, it's Owen, Vouch, Bap, all gay people, spurging about me. And that's literally all the, you know, people are like, oh, Nick is gay. What's the evidence? He was hanging out with a guy, and they were laughing, and they looked at each other. Oh, well, say no more. Case closed. Right? Bob said, I guess we're gay just for having this conversation. Bob Sacamano says, these schizos unironically think you're just going to throw away everything you've worked for by coming out as gay because you had a friend on a stream. Retards. Well, that's the other thing, is it was streamed. It was streamed live. People are like, Nick didn't think we'd see this one. The public live stream, 10-hour public live stream. It doesn't even make any sense. People, even on Destiny's subreddit, people are saying, wait a second. If Lolly Sox was really like a gay catboy, why would Nick stream with him? This doesn't make any sense. And everyone's like, that doesn't make any sense. Maybe because, you know, you're spreading lies. Elijah says Civ 5 or Civ 6. The people must know. Everybody knows it's Civ 5. Everybody knows this. Unpossible says, someday when you have to start doing your own laundry, just remember to separate your whites from your coloreds. Mixing them just ruins all the clothes. Oh, good to know. Thanks for that. I think that happened with my Hawaiian shirt. I think my mom put it in with a red shirt or something because it came out like pink. It used to be white. Now it's like pink. So, and that's something to think about. You know, I wanted that shirt to remain white. It was a white shirt. I liked the way it looked, and I wanted it to remain white. But that's the thing. You know, you throw in pinks and other things with the whites, and it changes them. It alters them. They do not remain the original color. And, you know, I purchased them for the original color. It's okay to have clothes that are white. You need clothes that are white. You need white t-shirts. You need white dress shirts. You need white regular shirts. It's nice to have white shirts. You know, and some, you know, some people, they just want clothes that are just all different colors. What's that all about? I don't hate shirts that are, you know, pink or whatever, but I just like also having white shirts too. And I want my shirt to be white. My Hawaiian shirt to be white, okay? It's important to me. Anyway, it's very, very important. I feel very strongly about laundry. Kayla says, whoops, scroll down too far. Yeah, okay. Jonas says, meow, where are the catboys at? I don't know. MS says, all these people jealous. They can't have Nick all to themselves. Yeah, that's what it is. Austin says, the church is the new Israel. Not all who are of Israel are Israel. Romans 9:6. The modern state of Israel is a political entity and not biblical in any way. Completely true. Completely accurate. That's where a lot of Protestants go wrong. They think Israel means the Jewish state of Israel created in 1948, and it's not the case. Ham Side says, V cringe super chat tonight. Welcome back, Nick. Thanks. Kino says, Leviticus 18:22, based. Jax, as I asked you to Sargon of Akkad, and he said he'd be interested in interviewing you. Would you consider it? I would. I would do an interview with Sargon. I like Sargon a lot. I know you guys maybe don't. I don't know. I never followed the Sargon lore, so I know a lot of people are like, Sargon, cringe. But I don't know. On our debate, I thought he was funny. I thought he was great. Dupas says, hey, let me ask you a question. So hanging out with that crossdresser, is that ironic? I mean, is that a part of your act? What do you think? Is that a clown thing? Is that a clown thing? What do you think? That's pretty funny. I have the card, actually, for that. But let's see. Cornman says, is that a part of your act? Is that a part of my act? What do you think? Oh, excuse me, I have to go take care of my mother. Cornman says, hope these super chats aren't too bad today. They are. Can't wait to get back into my routine of... that. He said that, by the way, not me. He said they are. Can't wait to get back into my routine of listening to the No Agenda podcast on the way to work in America First when I get home. Keep it up, bud. Well, thanks, buddy. Hope you enjoy. Birdie says, hashtag bird gang represent. Yeah. Okay. Life is Cope says, lost over 30 kilograms over the past year watching your streams for entertainment while exercising. Nothing else overcomes the boredom. Demographics might be bad for the West, but it's pretty good for my health. And it's good for me. It's good for my show. That's why I hear you. The downside about totally safe, secure, homogeneous, orderly country is that there's no America First. So, pros and cons. Joseph says, most of these people are Owen and Vouch watchers, LMAO. Yeah, which it only proves my point. Princess Amunda says, you are the chosen one. I am the chosen one. Morden Trump says, happy new year, big guy. Want to know your thoughts on Ashley Ray Groypenberg. Seems pretty based for a Jewish femoid. She's currently taking on the retards over at Human Events. Yeah, she's totally based. I love her. RJ, she wrote a great article about Ian Miles Chong. RJ says, every non-economic interaction the U.S. has had with another country since 1783 has been a mistake. Going to have to disagree with you on that one. Alex says, okay, Mr. Trump, we'll pay for your airbase just as soon as you pay for all the infrastructure destroyed by your illegal invasion. Yeah. Yay, listen, Trump, yeah, you need to do this. You know, Trump looks down on you as the, you know, God Emperor of Israel. It's just such a cope. Hey, listen, Trump, you need to start listening to me. You know, the Chad Trump doesn't care. The Chad Trump eating ice cream while Jared Kushner runs the country into the ground. Versus the Virgin, red in the face, calling the White House again. You need to tell Mr. President, this is not what I voted for. You know, sweating, red face, you know. Veins bulging. This is the 10th time I've called the White House today. We need to tie up the switchboards. You know, Trump is like on his feet up, eating ice cream, watching Hannity. Jared, is the wall built yet? We're working on it. We'll finish it. You know, it's shoveling Big Macs and French fries. Yeah. Who's the Chad there? Let's see. Member of Incel says, I only dislike Lolly Socks because he has sex with strangers. Yeah, big agree on that one. He seemed legit, Chad, but lacks the subtlety to not brag about hedonism to Baked Alaska. He seems legit, Chad, but lacks the subtlety to not... I don't know exactly what you're getting at there, but yeah. Well, that's the best part is during our stream, we talked for an hour. I tried to convince him to become a Christian, you know? So that's another thing that you do on gay dates is try to convince somebody to become Catholic and stop having premarital sex, right? But yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. That part is degenerate. He is a coomer, which is unfortunate, but it's not quite the same as what he's being accused of, right? So, Nabil says, Protestants, how do you know which books are in the Bible? Are you infallible? So how could you know? Yeah, totally true. Nose Out says, next super chatter's pee-pee smells like poo-poo. Jack says, are you building 7-pilled? I am building 7-pilled. That's pretty entry-level stuff, though, I have to tell you. Harry says, funny how the media always talks about the Holocaust, but will never even acknowledge the Bent Muscle Massacre. Really makes you think, yeah. That's true, it does make you think. I guess some lives matter more than others, right? No one will ever talk about Bent Muscle and the shooting spree that was went on. Life is Cope says, do you fish? I do not fish. Thomas says, my bro didn't even kiss at his wedding yesterday. Worried about white birth rates. Trusting the plan. Keep making us laugh. Well, thanks, buddy. I don't really know what that means. Federal agent says, sorry for the chat tonight, big guy. I've got to get paid. The Bureau has made you a priority, and I've got to send in my spurts. Yeah, it's all good. You're just doing your job. Minnesota Groiper says, the whole Lolly Sox Catboy controversy is a bread tube psyop that seems to have fooled some people supposedly in the movement. This is a classic Marxist subversion tactic designed to divide us. Yeah, I think that's totally legitimate. And it's not going to work. It's not going to work because I'm smarter than they are. Lula says, hey. Conscience of a Conservative says, ex-libertarian here. Thanks for helping me go paleocon. You're welcome. Sebastian says, would you date a trans person for a year if it meant that all of them would return to normal after? No. Deano says, still love you, bro. Thanks. Birdie says, anyone who isn't Bird Gang is stinky. Okay. Courtney says, hey there, Sonny. Quick question, LOL. Have you ever heard of George Orwell's 1984? Because I think we're living in it. That's a pretty hot take. Polish American says, any resolutions for the new year? Strongly recommend everyone get closer to Christ. Burp. With morning offerings, mental prayer, gospel reading, and weekly confession. Yeah, big agree. That's a good New Year's resolution. But I don't really have any. I guess I'll do those. And I don't know. What else? Tell me what else I should do, I guess. Just tell me more things I should do. Reduit says, why do conservatives care more about attacks by Iranian proxies on foreign soil than attacks by Sunni proxies on the homeland? Plus, why does nobody care about Sunni imams educated in Saudi Arabia infiltrating the West? You know why that is. You know, I guess that's a rhetorical question. But it's true. You know, the biggest state sponsor of terrorism isn't Iran. It's Saudi Arabia. Everybody knows that. That is like, you know, household information at this point. That, you know, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, where do you think they're getting the money? Where do you think they're getting their ideology? Where do you think they're getting their imams, the fatwas? Where do you think that's coming from? It's coming from Saudi Arabia. It's coming from the Gulf states. Everyone knows that. When's the last time an Iranian-backed proxy has attacked Americans on American soil? You know, I said Hezbollah is Israel's problem, not ours, in a tweet, and somebody replied with the Beirut bombings in 1983, okay? 40 years ago. Well, 9/11 was done by mostly Saudis. Osama bin Laden was, you know, he got his money from Saudi Arabia. So, and this is pretty standard stuff, pretty common information, but it is worth repeating. Elijah says, hey, Nick, glad to have you back. For my first day of college, I dragged my you-know-what on the bathroom sinks and door handles. Okay, thank you for that. Birdie says, Birdie is drone operator who killed Iranian civs. Okay. Sard says, hey, Nick, serious question. Do you think Spencer gets off sexually from the idea of being dominated by Iran? That's kind of cringe. But, you know, there are people that do just, like, hate America. I don't hate America. A lot of people do this thing where they see you know, neocons and whatever, and their response is like, oh, I love Iran now. I would never do that. I don't support war with Iran, but I also don't like Iran. I like America. And I know, you know, America's occupied by, you know, certain people, but it's still my home. It's still my country, and I love my country, okay? So I will never say that I support Iran, because I support us. I support our people. Joseph says, FYI, Golden State Times is asking for an interview. Okay, well, they can send me an email. Ajax says, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Not a lot happening this week, so I turned myself into a pickle. I pickle Nick. I wish it was that simple. Oswaldo says, thanks for talking about the Iran situation, not fake AstroTurf Catboy stuff. The high IQs appreciate it. Well, did people think I was going to do a show about fake e-drama? But yeah, I guess the Super Chats are about that. Boopers says, sup, Nick? Squints. Wait, who is this hairy old man? Hey, don't say that. Don't say that. I look young. Primarina says, welcome back, Nick. I can't wait for another exciting year of America First. Also, any future events planned? Yeah, CPAC and some others, which will be announced soon. Member of Incel says, get bored. Content vacation. Content. ... I don't know what that means. Architect says, why did they make the country of Iran in the Middle East of all these U.S. bases? Why did they make the country of Iran in the middle of all these U.S. bases? So aggressive towards U.S. who are just trying to defend themselves. Oh, I've never heard that one before. Really hot take there. Dude, that's so fresh. Big Boy on Campus says, hey, Nick, I've been reading Gottfried recently, and I'm wondering if there are any authors or specific books you'd recommend on conservatism and political theory. Oh, thoughts. Think book recommendation. Russell Kirk has a great book called The Conservative Reader. Russell Kirk also has a great book called The Politics of Prudence. What's the right book? It's either that one or it's Roots of American Order. But he goes through all the authors, all the old like conservative authors in American history. There's a great book. I forget the author, but it's called Conservatism in America Since 1945, which is good. You can read Nisbet. You can read, what is it, Röpke? I think that's how it's pronounced. Oxshott, Schmidt. But are you talking about American conservatism or just conservatism in general? If it's conservatism in general, Schmidt, Heidegger, Oxshott, Burnham. You know, these are some authors you can read. That's a lot. That's a lot. You're not going to handle all that, so start with all that. Quality says, we've had our rightful place in society stolen, and now we must be crushed and pounded back down to where we belong, imprison all working women at once. Okay. If that's a woman saying, that's kind of cringe. Name says, you're living some kind of Twilight Zone episode, stuck making a news show with no news, but if you stop, the world is destroyed. And throughout it all, you have thousands of producers in a year with terrible advice. Yeah, it is a Twilight Zone scenario. You know, do the show and it's no news forever. Don't do the show for a week and the world is on fire and you have to come back, right? Quality Hops says, shout out to the Groip Wives with more than 5 kids. Yeah, Groip Wives. You know, I see where people are saying it's becoming Kekistan. That's why I said in my speech, maybe it's time to retire, Groiper. Bing says, I asked my dad about the bombing of Salami, and he just ranted about Salami. Salami, yeah. And he ranted about Muslims and terrorists and the USA's overwhelming strength. Boomers are so epic, actually. I really love them. They are epic, you know. It is epic to bomb in a general sense. Let's see. This is degenerate, not reading that. Portable Power says, do you think that Jeffrey Epstein is still alive? Would you be willing to at least entertain the possibility? I think him and Maxwell were basically officially outed as Mossad recently. It's possible. And yeah, Ghislaine Maxwell is Mossad. Gary Oak says, love the show. Keep up the good work. Cornman says, Billy Crudup might be a based actor. I don't know what that means. We're going way over, by the way. It's 10:20. We've been at this for, what is that then, 3 hours almost? So I might just call it short. I think I'm going to read the big super chats, and I'm going to call it a night, because otherwise the first part's going to get cut. KVL says, glad to have you back, big guy. Thanks. Fed in Law says, Wignat Anakin destroys intergalactic democracy, installs the autocratic imperial empire, and finally took care of the eternal interfering Jedi. He even donned a certain facial mask. Yeah, based Wignat Anakin. I would say he's more like NRX Anakin. E.T. says, chipping in, or that's E.J.T., chipping in for some conversion therapy in case you feel it's needed. Oh, thanks a lot. Let's see. Maskman says, hi, Nick, New Year, or Happy New Year. Work kept me from seeing your last stream, so I thought I'd say it now. For the new year, I want to get involved in local politics. Any tips for how to network, campaign to challenge entrenched officials? Just don't reveal your power level. Just be a politician and don't reveal your power level. It's kind of that simple. Gavin says, thanks, Nick, for everything you do. Myself and other artists are working hard to bring America first and God to the art world. I hope we artists can help. America needs inspiration and beauty again. Yeah, we definitely need that. ASDF says, retards in chat, nuclear non-proliferation, security dilemma, rentier effect. All sounds like Hebrew nonsense to me. Neocon Nick, give it up, Nick, and ignore the vouch of Wignat shills. I will. Welfare recipient says, don't know if you've already mentioned this, but Trump and others like to claim that the JCPOA paid Iran $150 billion when in reality all it did was unfreeze some assets held before the revolution. So in other words, it gave them $150 billion. We could quibble about the details, but if that's the effect of it, it's effectively the same. Jay Roxer says, my knicker, your true fans, trust the plan. All these feds in chat are in Palpatine mode screaming, no, no. Then they realize they have no Sith lightning. Great analogy, by the way. Love that. Leo says, Nick does have that Malcolm in the Middle vibe, though. Wait, Frankie Muniz, Nick Fuentes, trust the plan, minus the L, Pan American Dream, Hollywood MK Ultra. It's all jokes. Okay, Schizo in chat. Austin says, honest answer, is there really any need for us to be in the Middle East acting as the world's police officer? They have no evidence of WMDs anyway. No. What do you mean, honest answer? The answer is no. Master Debater says, the contractor killed starting this escalation was hit by an inaccurate Katyusha rocket, and the investigators found no one at the launcher and no one took credit, feeling like a Gulf of Tonkin moment. It's very possible. Like I said, we're working with information that they're telling us. We really have no way of knowing. It's happening in the desert. Nobody knows except for the guy that launched it, whoever ordered this thing. You know what I mean? So what we know is what the media or some form of media tells us. So judge, I'm going off what we have from the news. If we can skepticize, we can be skeptical and scrutinize every detail, but you know, that's not really a practical way to analyze the situation. We have to work with sort of what the, you know, what the world believes about this, if that makes sense. Josh says, why was there a complete lack of mention of Israel in your timeline? Do you think the state of Israel has any influence in the Iran situation? Thanks for the big super chat, but why is there any lack of mention of Israel? That's just simply not true. I have not been tweeting a lot because I was on vacation until yesterday, but if you look at all my retweets, almost all my retweets, well, a lot of them are about the Israeli influence in all this, so I don't know if you're implying anything. Why was there a complete lack of mention? What a fucking dishonest thing to say. I'm so sick of liars. Just stop lying, dude. Just please just stop lying. I'm not asking nicely. Chandler, next liar is going to die in Call of Duty. Chandler has been checking the concern troll accounts in the chat. All of them are brand new accounts spamming identical chats. Fake and gay. Sending love from Dallas. Thanks. Yeah, it is all fake and gay. It always is. Let's see. I got to take only the big ones because we're running out of time. Austin says the Iran attacks are kind of like poking a caged bear. The bear is only a threat when we go on the cage. When we poke them, everyone else in the cage suffers. Yeah, true. Sebastian says people need to stop lying, bruh. Just trust. Well, just stop lying. Don't have to trust. Just stop lying, right? And if you're curious, look into the details. None of what is being said is supported by evidence. The neocon front, the China front, the Catboy thing, everything. You know, the Ben Shapiro thing. None of what is being said by anybody trying to spin tales about me has any basis in reality. But people, like, hear a thing and they're like, well, explain this. Why don't, if you're concerned, look it up. You know, I'll explain anyway, but it would help if people just stop perpetuating untrue rumors or lying or starting them. Pro-truth anti-media says Trump ruined U.S. credibility with countries that we had great potential with. Make everyone hate us before we are tossed aside for China to move into the new Belt and Road trade route. Our relations sabotaged. I don't think that's totally true. Diabetes, a shout out to Joshua Moon, the based feeder. I don't know what that means, but thanks. Joe the Boomer says, I got you, Nick. Hot tub energy inbound. Thanks for the hot tub energy. Jordan says, shills were in the chat tonight trying to turn people against you, but I still believe. Anyway, I can't help but feel like this whole Iran thing is one big Zog distraction. No, dude, the end game of Zog is war in Iran. That's not the distraction, that's the end game. Rudolph says, if Iran hits us, we should always hit them back 100 times harder to the point of destroying and ethnically genociding Iran and imposing a process of colonizing and replacing. Okay, yeah, disavow. Anon says the nuclear family, but it's funny to say that if you're saying it ironically. Nuclear family is the bedrock of strong America, but with women the way they are, how will they come around? Without women on board, we are ultimately doomed. Would you settle for a wignat? What does that mean? What do you mean? I would not marry a wignat. I'm going to marry a normal woman, Catholic woman, and we're going to have kids and not get divorced. We're going to live Catholic sexual morality. And that's what you do. I don't know what, you know, being a wignat has to do with feminists, right? I'm not going to marry a feminist. I'm not going to marry some dummy on birth control. I'm not going to marry somebody, you know, who's going to try and be calling the shots with an attitude. Not going to happen. How will they come around? How do they have to be bullied, frankly? That's the whole no e-girls thing, the cringe femoid thing. That's what that's all about. Suko says, if we're not acquiring territories to settle, goods to plunder, people to pay tribute to us, our military action is pointless, and we should suspend it all. We want returns for our tax expenditure. Well, that's kind of LARPy. I mean, that's not going to happen. Let's see. I got to find where we left off here. I had to refresh the page. So let me find. What was the last one we saw? I got to keep scrolling back. Bro, we're like never going to finish these super chats. I might have to just call it a night right now. It's like I have to go back to like 9 o'clock to find more super chats. Let me see. Here we go. Okay. So we're up to 9.09 p.m. It is 10. So we're an hour behind on Super Chats. The show's already been going for 3 hours. Charlie says, Nick, I hope you are well. Christ is king. Stay strong, man. The storm is temporary, and through prayer, you can get past anything. So true. Really good comics is RIP Totally Archer. Hashtag you had to be there. Okay, thanks. Liam says, imagine not getting it. So many cringe wignets spurging out. Yeah, they don't get it. James says, also, did you see how Netanyahu claimed they had nothing to do with this attack and were essentially throwing us under the bus in the case of war with Iran? Truly our greatest ally. Yeah, you love to see it. Israel's really epic like that. Totally not duplicitous, underhanded, scumbags. Really good comic says, Nick, what up? Not much, just chilling. Peanuts says, I just farted, LMAO. Cool. Really good comics says, war is literally so funny. Imagine being the high school bully, but some useless country is a booger-picking, window-looking nerd. It's funny. That's all that matters. So true. So true. It is. It is funny. You know, we're just like throwing bombs at everybody. We spend so much money on the military. We just overpower them at such a ridiculous rate. And people are like, we can't do anything with it. It's so gay. It's a couple of missiles, couple of bombs. Not a big deal. In this case, it was bad, okay? In this case, it was a mistake. But generally speaking, it is funny. I'm with you on the energy behind that one. John Cardillo's rape reaction says, glad to see you back in the new year, King. I wasn't sure about your Iran take based on your Telegram posts, but you laid it out here very well, very based. I'm too old to get the Catboy stuff, but the controversy seems silly. Well, thanks. Yeah, that's all about right. Anonymous says, hey, Nick, been a fan for a few months, and you've been one of the main influences to help change myself and stop my sexual degeneracy and convert from a non-denominational Christian to a Catholic. Praying for your success, King. Keep spreading the word. Well, hey, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for the big super chat. Glad I could help. Glad I could help red pill you on politics and religion. That's good to hear. Henry says, I genuinely thought he was a homosexual. Thanks for straightening this out. Yeah, well, and that's just it. It's like people are like, oh, good luck explaining this one. Oh, okay, literally everyone is lying. Really? Everyone? Like, yeah, you know, it's communists, pedophiles, leftists. You know, it kind of makes sense when you think about it like that. But Farhouse says, hey, Nick, it was my friend Spence's birthday yesterday. Can you give him a shout out? We started a book club called Based Book Club. Thoughts? That's pretty cringe. Glass half empty says there's video evidence of your Chad friend sucking a black dildo on pole. LOL, bruh, maybe you didn't know. Well, you know, like, if we want to get technical, he wasn't sucking on it. He had a straw coming out of it. Which, you know, I don't avow dildos, okay? I don't avow everything he's ever done, but if we want to get into the weeds and get technical about it, in fairness, I did ask him about it months and months ago, and he said, oh no, this is a prop. This is to be funny. You know, when people say sucking on, I don't want to, it sounds very degenerate. You know, when you get into the weeds of it, it's like, this is a family show. But, you know, look, we want to go there. Let's go there. When people say sucking on, they're implying that he's like fellating it, that it's like performing fellatio on it, which is not what's happening. Okay. And I know that's not, don't get me wrong. That's not like a, that doesn't make it much better, but it is different. You do understand that it is different, right? It's not better, but you know, using it as a prop, as a straw, and, you know, it being a prop, it is a joke. That is different than doing, like, a sexual camboy thing. Do you know what I'm getting at here? So, don't get me wrong. I've told him straight up on many occasions, like, that's gay and retarded and cringe, and you shouldn't do that. But, you know, it went from what? Nick is dating him to Nick is associating with the guy who one time took a lewd picture. Like, do you understand how the goalposts have shifted then? It's like Vaush was claiming that he was a sex worker who I flew out here to have sex with, presumably, Well, that's all lies. So now the goalpost has shifted to, well, you are aware that you hung out with somebody who posted a lewd picture one time. Oh, okay, well, lock me up, right? Arrest me. I know that is really a big deal. I hung out with a guy who took a picture. You know, no, it's a regrettable picture, but I mean, let's get real. Let's have a sense of proportion about these things. So, and you can ask him about that. I'm not trying to defend believe me, the anime thing, obviously not my thing. I don't get into anime much on this show or anywhere else, really, but, you know, let's be real. JP says, hey, young man, JP Boomer here. Here's a small, humble token of well wishes in 2020 for you, Bryce, and your honorable Groiper Army. Love the show. Keep doing God's work. Well, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Sulk says, the knee-jerk crap pointing fingers and spurging gay is feminist psyop tactics. Makes men defensive instead of brotherly. Skip it. You're fine, King. True. That's another part of it, too, is they have always been trying to undermine male friendships. You know, another part about Lolly Socks is he is a Chad, you know, so what better way to undermine Chads and friendships than to say, oh, everything's gay. And we even talked about that on the stream. We addressed the very, you know, all this controversy we addressed even on the stream before it happened. So, let's see. Clark, I think we've done it to death at this point, but all the super chats are about the same thing. So I respond to the super chats. Clark says, LMAO, imagine voting for Trump to save the system and not accelerating the end of times. Okay, thank you for that. Thank you for that high IQ comment. What else? Like I said, I'm only going to take the big ones here. Oh, that doesn't sound right. Big super chats. Going to take the big super chats because we're running out of time. Let's have sort of unfortunate phrasing there. We'll take a few off the end here. Let's see. John Smith said, okay, I'm not reading that one. Robin says, Israel is the reason why we killed Soleimani. I think there's a lot of truth to that, yep. Chris says, do you support USA to Israel? No. Do you know? Hi, I'm Nick. No, we don't support foreign aid to Israel. Have you ever watched this show before? Let's see. Second says, hi, Nick, favorite color? Hard-hitting stuff. Going to be red for me. I like red. ASDF says, Ben Shapiro, at his next speech, here's something the leader of Alt-Right 2 said recently about white and pink shirts. Yeah. Here's Alt-Right leader hanging out with Catboy Cammy. Let's see. Peanut says, with YouTube TOS update, is it safe to say the cigarette word? No, I don't think so. All right, I'll take this last one. Nova Course is favorite hero and villain in Battlefront 2 heroes and villains. Favorite hero in Battlefront 2. I would probably go with favorite heroes and villains. Probably Darth Maul. I think Darth Maul is the best. But that's going to be the last one for us on the show. I want to end it on a lighter note there. That's going to do it for us on the show. Hopefully tomorrow it's going to be more back to normal. You know, World War III canceled. Controversy addressed. It's over. You know, they thought they were going to defeat me with controversy, but I exposed all the lies. It's over. It's done. You can't say it anymore. You look ridiculous if you do. So Nick wins. I'm back from vacation. And that's going to do it for us on the show tonight. Remember to subscribe to my email list. New terms of service. Got me feeling different. I don't know how much longer we have on this show. 2020. Hopefully we make it for longer, but, you know, we never know. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen next week. We don't know if I could get banned, right? So if you want to see what happens with the show in the event that we do get banned, sign up for my email list. It's the only thing, okay? That's how I'm going to tell people where they can find me. It's the only way that we can be protected against deplatforming. So be sure to do that. Sign up at NicholasJFuentes.com. Link is down below. Just go to the website and it pops up right there. You put your email in and you're on the list. Also subscribe to my Telegram channel. That's t.me/NickJFuentes1. Link is also down below. You know, that's kind of good, but I feel like even Telegram could become problematic eventually, you know, in terms of deplatforming. So email list, you should definitely be on there, but Telegram is good too. Subscribe to this channel. Give me a big thumbs up. Leave a comment down below. Click the notification bell to get notified every time I go live. Remember, we're on the air Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time I'm Nicholas J. Fuentes. As always, thanks for watching. Thanks to our super chatters. Thanks to everybody that watches the show. We love you, folks. Welcome back to the show. Good to have you. And we will see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.